Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, my name is Robbie Fisher, and I'm going to be your host tonight. I'm with Fools International, and we're going to have a good show. Well, I want to welcome everybody. This is my first show that I'm hosting by myself. Richie wasn't able to do it; he's at work, and so I'm going to kind of get things started. Since this is my show today, this is what we're going to end up doing. We are going to imagine as if we're sitting around the beanery table, and I'm a lieutenant with my department, and so I'm going to be representing, basically being a lieutenant, and my guest is a captain, and I want you guys to think that it's a ladder and an engine. It's a double house in this station, and we're sitting at the beanery table, and it's going to be me and the captain and anybody else that wants to join in with us. Before I get going too far, I want to thank Fire Engineering in Penwell for allowing us to be able to be a part of this. I want to especially thank Bobby Halton for helping us out here. And, the Fools only get a show every month, and we're very thankful to be able to be on. My guest tonight, I got a special guest. Been working on this for a while and bringing this person in, and then all of a sudden Oprah ended up bringing him on her show, and so my special guest Lance Armstrong isn't going to be here, but I did get another guest. He might have been violating some performance enhancing drugs in another style, but tonight I am going to have Captain Ben Flegel with us, a good brother of mine. Great friend and captain from up in Alaska. So, Ben, you here with me, man?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, brother. So, so you and I, we're here at this table, Ben, and you're working on the truck, which kind of disappoints me. I wish I was on the truck, but I'll play it as a lieutenant, and you're going to be the captain on the truck, and we're going to have a conversation. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Before we get too far along, I want to mention that since our last show, Richie was on in November, there's been a few fatalities. I pulled up the U.S. Fire Administration records and just kind of looking over to see how we did last year, It's a little disappointing, I'll tell you that. I'm looking at some of the numbers. The U.S. Fire Administration reported 83 firefighter on duty fatalities with 15 hometown heroes. But the thing that really caught my eye about all of this was that 45.8% are related to stress and overexertion, and 22.9% are related to vehicle collisions. And those, to me, are two things that we can control. Don't you agree, Ben?
Absolutely. You and I are both up front in the cab every shift, and we know that we're responsible for that wheel and how fast it's moving. So,
yeah, I mean,
yes,
just,
we can make a change there.
Yeah, one, slow down. Two, put on your seatbelt. And the third thing that really stands out is we're fat. Plain and simple, we're fat. Most of us are, I think most of us are probably overweight. I'll just say that. And, I've just recently changed my diet, changed my exercise. I'm feeling great. In fact, today's my last day on the Advocare 24-day challenge, and I feel good about it, and I'm going places with it, and I'm excited. So, You know, if you are a brother or sister out there that's looking at yourself going, I don't look the same that I did 10 years ago, do something about it. You know, get out, get some exercise in, and start changing your eating habits. One of the things is just make my portions smaller. So with that, I'm going to bring in Richie Stack with our conversation. He's texting me right now. He's sitting here on hold, but I'm going to pop him in right here. You there, brother?
What's up? How you doing, Robbie? Hey, Ben.
Hey, boss. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Hey, I'll just say hey real quick, and then I'll come back because I heard your statement about us being overweight and fat, and I definitely am, and they just called chow, so I'm actually going to go eat right now. So hope that ties in perfectly with your talk radio show tonight. I just want to say thank you for doing the show tonight. I want to thank everyone for listening, and as always, thank Fire Engineers. So I want to call and do a shout-out to all you guys, to all the Fools Chappers out there. Thank you for making this program a success, and thank you for you two tonight for your hard work. And when I'm done filling up with salad, dinner, and dessert, I will come back in and I'll give you guys a call back.
Sounds good. Remember, portion size. You don't need to eat two plates.
No, that's why I get a dinner. I get like a platter plate and just fill it one time.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you later on.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Robbie.
Take care, boss.
Bye.
All right, a couple other announcements. You know that we've had one of our brothers from the Kalamazoo Fools. He passed away. Jeffrey Smith passed away on January 16th. He had been battling cancer, and real sad to see that situation. And I also want to point out, we just had a recent fatality that's got a little bit of attention in the news. Matthew Porcari, Owego Fire, the Fallen Angel Fools of New York he wasn't a fool, but the Fallen Angel Fools of New York, they're trying to help out the family and the fire department. And so I just like to take a quick moment of silence for all of our brothers that have brothers or sisters have lost in 2012 and most recently the two here. Okay, thank you so much with that. And just one last announcement is Convention 2013. It's coming up September 17th through the 20th. It's going to be in St. Louis, the Muddy River Fools. Dave Dabowski, him and his hooligans are going to be putting this thing on. I'm excited. I know Ben's excited. Part of the reason why we're probably both excited is we each have hosted a convention, so we know what goes into it, and it's a lot of fun to be an observer on the outside, isn't it, Ben?
It is, no doubt, much more relaxed.
For sure. So, all right. Ben, you and I, we share a similar experience. And this will kind of get us into our topic tonight, which is we're going to be talking about leadership. And, we both were in the Marine Corps. I joined right out of high school in 1987. I went to MCRD in San Diego. I had a short stay there. I got injured while I was at MCRD, and I was sent home before graduating. But one of the things about our experience in the Corps, or your experience in the Corps, or basically anybody's experience in the military, is that, you know, how important leadership is. And the other thing is that when you look at the fire service being a paramilitary type organization, the fire service and the Marine Corps in this case have some parallels when it comes to leadership. Don't you agree there, Ben?
I do. I do agree. One of the things that has really torn at me over my 20 years in the fire service is the search for the leadership that I expected to get. And I've heard other firefighters say the same thing. And there's some parallels that things that the Marine Corps has gone through and things that the fire service has gone through, and I began to piece those together. And I think there's things we can do about it to change the what I consider a leadership crisis.
Well, while you're saying that, let's just take the quote. I you and I talked earlier today, and kind of the introduction or the little description of what we were going to be talking about tonight. I put the quote that you were using, and I'll let you kind of describe the quote a little bit more, but I'll read it really quickly, and I think we can use this as a basis to really kind of start from. And the quote is coming from Colonel Lowe from the United States Marine Corps, and says, "You need to know that they respect you and admire you. You need to know that they want and need your leadership. All you have to do is never fail them in this regard, and everything will turn out great. Hold up your end of the bargain, and they will not fail." Where was that coming from?
Yeah, Ben? He was talking to the leadership, the future leadership of the Corps. He was at Quantico at a mess night. I had told you earlier it was a graduation, but I reread the article. It was mess night, and that's a gathering, in a school. It's a formal setting. You know, everybody's wearing their dress uniforms. You get a guest speaker, just like a fire department would do. And I think the Marine Corps still passes out cigars. We don't do that anymore. But anyway, what he was doing was he was the guest speaker. He was the keynote. And they asked him to get up and talk about his 28 years of service. And this is the kind of Marine that you don't want to meet in a dark room for many reasons. And he was upfront about that. And he was confronting the fact that they're about to go into the fleet and take over the job of leadership at the most basic officer level of fleet Marines. And some of those Marines would have 15 years in, 20 years in. Some of those Marines were 17 or 18 years old and had already taken several lives and seen their comrades killed in combat. It's just like arriving in the fire station as the brand new lieutenant or a brand new captain and having to take on a new company, some of whom have been doing the job a lot longer than you. And you have to face up to those leadership challenges. And what he's telling them there, and I absolutely love this quote, it just really leaped out at me the first time I read the speech. What he's saying is you need to understand in your core structure there inside yourself that they're waiting for good leadership. They may not know it's you. They may not know your name is Rob or Ben, but you are the lieutenant. You are the one arriving to take over that job, and they are waiting for you to lead. They're waiting for you to earn their respect, and they want to give it to you. And as long as you don't fail them in that regard, everything's going to turn out fine because they will allow you to make mistakes. But you have to begin in a way that they can come to grips with who you are and give you their respect. And as you and I both know, a leadership who starts expecting that respect handed to them without having earned it is going to crash into a wall.
And Ben, this is like, you know, I'm thinking in the bay, you know, at the station, and we're talking to a new probie, or a newer guy in the house, and we say, hey, look, you know what, you haven't earned anything yet. And that, you know, we talk about their reputation and how quickly they can lose their reputation. And we talk about respect just as an individual. And I'm not talking about leadership here, but it's basically the same thing where we tell them that it's going to take some time for you to earn the respect of everybody in the house. And as for a leader, it's the same thing, right? I mean, you're coming in and you know, these guys want to follow you, or gals, they want to follow you, but it's still going to take a period of time of developing that level of respect. Am I correct in saying that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. They, you know, when you're a new leader and you walk into a group, there is always that informal leader who is the top dog in the absence of the formal leader. And the top dog in the informal sense may or may not want to cooperate with that new leader. And so even if they're not consciously trying to take your leadership away or prevent you from obtaining your place of leadership, that is the person or the group that you are dealing with in establishing that respect.
Mm-hmm.
The great majority of them want to be led, and they don't even necessarily know it. Their bravado would indicate the opposite. They, you know, I think back to as a Marine, and I was not a infantry Marine. I was an aircraft mechanic, and we were one of the most unruly bunch of Marines that I think crawled across the planet. And our guys were always in trouble, always causing problems. We were undisciplined, sloppy looking. But man, when a Marine walked into our presence and took command, he could have asked us to do anything and we would have obeyed. It was the guys that missed the mark, that failed to get our respect, that had no impact whatsoever. But we were waiting for them to do so. And there's an extreme lack of disappointment in highly trained people who are waiting to do their job at an extreme level, and the leadership is not what they expected it to be at that moment.
Yeah. I got a caller coming in, so I'm going to bring this caller in real quick and let them be a part of our conversation. Let them pull up a chair. We'll bring them on.
All right, let's let her rip.
Caller, you're on with Ben and Rob. Pull up a chair. Are you there?
He's there.
Are you there, brother?
Hello?
Ben, are you with me, man?
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know. I tried to bring in that call. Let's try him again. You there, brother?
Hello?
You there, brother?
Hello?
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 I can hear him.
Hello? Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
I don't know if you guys can hear me, but I'm going to probably call you guys back. I can't hear you guys. Hello?
All right, brother, call us back. I don't know what the deal is there. Caller, if you're going to be calling in, it's the phone number is 760-454-8852. And for some reason, we couldn't get that caller on with us. But call back again, or if you having some trouble, you know, give it another shot. So. So Ben, with the leadership, you know, what are some of the things that you pulled from your experience in the Marine Corps and are using now today and with, you know, being a captain at university?
Well, ironically, it has more to do with what the Marine Corps failed to do at the time. And let me clarify that. I think there is no finer military organization than the Marine Corps. And I went in with that attitude and opinion. It was only after I had left the Marine Corps in frustration at the lack of leadership that I encountered that I began to realize that the leadership had been there, and I had allowed poor leadership to capture my focus. And my anger at that poor leadership led me to step out of the Marine Corps when I didn't intend to. Unfortunately, the fire service was there for me to jump into. And as I matured and as I've grown, it really bothered me that the Marine Corps didn't lead me the way I expected. And I began to look into Marine Corps leadership. I just began to study what they do to make a Marine the way we become, the damage that's done, you might want to say, that can't be undone just by going through boot camp. You don't have to go to war. And because I was having trouble relating to my peers and my the other officers, the firefighters. Never have trouble capturing the younger crowd and leading them on. But sometimes with my superiors, I can often be very, very cantankerous, very difficult, very challenging. Whereas I wasn't that way as a Marine. As I began to study the Marine Corps a lot more, I learned from various Marine officers who have written about the subject that the Marine Corps made a huge error way back when, before Vietnam, and that in gearing up in the Cold War, they had a large shortage of platoon leaders, which are lieutenants. And they made up that shortfall immediately by taking their sergeants and staff sergeants and promoting them to lieutenant. In doing so, they created a huge gap in the sergeant NCO area of the enlisted ranks. And when they did that, they effectively removed the backbone. What they call the backbone of the Marine Corps is those sergeants and staff sergeants. And they intentionally made a huge gap, although that wasn't their thinking. What they were doing was grabbing that leadership and putting it where they needed it best. And don't you see that happen in the fire service all around you, especially in the volunteer departments where the leadership is in short supply, experienced senior firefighters are in short supply, and you have that gung-ho young guy, he might be a great driver, and maybe he's a phenomenal Jake on the nozzle, and you just want to capture that talent and make it an officer, and you leapfrog him up in the chain, he becomes a company officer, and then next thing you know, he's a battalion chief running, you know, duty calls, and I know several guys that have been put through that. Well, the same thing was happening in the Marine Corps on a massive scale. And so by the time I entered the Marine Corps, and I think you and I went in about the same time, the Marine Corps was trying to recover from that because they had lost that connection to their enlisted men by losing that backbone. And therefore, as people shuffle up to take the jobs that are open, they're skipping experience, which is critical. Because you can have all the training, you can have all the book knowledge, they can give you classes, but if you haven't accumulated those years of experience, you're not the same kind of leader. And so they created that big gap. I was feeling the effects of their trying to put that together.
Yeah, well, I can tell you in my experience, my 5 or 6 weeks in the Marine Corps, they had plenty of leadership, and they took it out on me. But
Well, you know, some of the finest.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the leaders that I remember best in the Marine Corps were my drill instructors and how they got me to do things. But there were individual Marines always that were worthy of respect, and I remember them clearly. It was observing the greater effort going on. So they were still struggling to put those pieces back together. Vietnam just clobbered the Marine Corps in many different ways. And it wasn't just that NCO gap. There was also a lot of social issues that affected it as well. And so, you know, your question was, how did that affect my leadership? It created a drive in me to understand what went wrong, what they've done to make it right, because they're a different organization now.
Yeah.
And I really admire what they've become at this point. And I believe there are things there that we can use in the firehouse. And so I've been relearning what I learned in boot camp about leadership. I've been applying it for several years now. And taking that combined with the things my chief is teaching me, I feel like I'm making some strides forward.
Yeah. You know, and I look at the – I guess we could really – compare the fire service to the Marine Corps and in regards to like Vietnam and everything after, you know, we had a period of time in the 70s where the fire service, especially the bigger cities, were seeing a ton of work. And the individuals, the firefighters back then, you know, the company officers promoted off into chief's ranks and were probably pretty strong on the fire ground, and they had their ways of the way they were going to be a battalion chief. It's probably not anything near what it is today that battalion chiefs are doing, but you know, but those firefighters that worked, you know, like Tommy Brennan, and you know, the list goes on. That when they promoted to be captains, you know, they're working in the 80s, and you know, those people are now retired, moved on, and what type of hole do we have in the fire service, you know, when it's coming to a level of experience? Now, some of the places like Chicago and New York, L.A., some places are, still see a decent amount of work. They probably have some pretty well-trained company officers in their organizations. But not only is that a problem, but the other problem is, you know, with three-man staffing, and that's a luxury in a lot of departments. With three-man staffing, if the first arriving engine, and I'll be that person today, if my crew and I arrive to a working fire and the driver is going to start working on securing a water supply to the plug that's, you know, in the area, my firefighter stretches the line and I get a quick hot lap to see what's kind of going on, and you on the ladder truck coming in with your two other guys, so another three-person company, there's six of us total, you know, you guys got your work to do, I'm going in with the firefighter inside. And what am I doing as a company officer? I'm not doing the role of company officer very well, because I am now functioning as a firefighter that has a radio and more responsibility, but I'm missing my roles as the leader. I'm missing my role to evaluate my environment, to be clear and listening to what's going on the radio. You know, hose catches up, I got to take care of the hose. So I see this as being a problem in the fire service. You know, very similar problem, and I hope that some of the chief officers and some of the up and coming chief officers, you know, in the future years are recognizing this and are thinking about it. Now, not that they're going to go in and say, okay, everybody's going to have four-man companies, but we might need to change something, you know, to impact it. One of the things that in our department that, you know, a number of us have talked about is combining two engine companies of three to get that first line into operation, which falls in suit with a lot of the other things that, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the job of the second arriving engine company is not to stretch the second line necessarily. It's to make sure the first line gets into operation. And so I think we can start addressing these things. But it's a similar problem that you were talking about in the Marine Corps.
That, and, you know, I can tell you from my own experience that, you know, any officer with his salt knows where he's supposed to be and knows what he's supposed to be paying attention to. But you're right. When the tools aren't there and you're having to pick up the slack from that fourth guy that's not there, it might be bugging time that you're not tending to those duties. But you're still falling in line with what you know has to happen as well. So you're dragging hose, and in the back of your head you're thinking, I don't even know where we're going. I haven't gotten a 360 done. Is this a basement fire? Is it an upstairs fire? I'm not sure yet. You know, those key questions, you're going into combat blind, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Officer needs to be free to gather that information. You know, I'm fortunate at University Fire, we have strong companies. Usually, most of the time, I've got a four-man crew, and they're extremely aggressive on the pipe. So I'm kind of off to the side quite often gathering that information. But once again, it's a student fire department that's working in a off-campus area. The dangers are real. Our guys are being threatened by those dangers, and it is paramount. I have to bring them home. And so that, before we go into anything, our awareness of the threat to those students is perhaps higher than it would be in a regular career crew, where you've got far more experience and everybody's up to speed on the same level.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've identified the problem. You know, let's talk about what we can do to change it. You know, what do you think? What's your opinion on how do we take a young officer that has limited experience working in probably 80% of the fire departments in America? How do we get that young officer to get the level, to be a quality leader? I won't say to get to a certain level because that's difficult to do without a lot of experience. But what are the things that we're looking for to make this guy or gal a quality leader?
Well, I think mentoring is critical. But I think in the absence of mentoring, you can't stand still and say, well, there's no one to teach me, therefore I'm not going to learn. There's a lot you can learn by watching and observing. Mike Lowe also said at that same speech, he said there are three types of leaders. There are those who learn by the book, those who learn by observation, and those who have to grab a hold of the electric fence before they get the message. And being a combination of all three of those is what's going to make a good officer. The guy that's pursuing book knowledge is a good place to start, and get those foundational principles down so that you understand them. And to me, the fire service is woefully lacking in books available that apply to the company officer. The certification books don't even really talk about leadership to any great significance, and most of it's brainy chatter that doesn't really impact the student. What's needed is leadership like you and I are talking right now. And that's why I turned back to the Marine Corps to find a basis for that in teaching people, because they do get down to the nitty-gritty in teaching their leaders from the beginning, and they establish principles and identify traits. And so that's where I've taken it as well. But before I go on with that, I think you have to have that knowledge. You have to be an observer because, I spent a lot of years working with conditions where I was extremely frustrated with the leadership. And I don't mean to discredit anybody I've ever worked for. There's lots of leaders around you all the time. And I felt like I was in a leadership vacuum. And I felt that everybody that I was frustrated with was struggling with the same thing. But that's still an opportunity to observe. And the pieces are still there. You just have to, you're looking at them in a negative light. And so you then have to learn the positive aspect of those same situations. And that's more work. But be an observer. You know, I've got a jump seater who a couple months ago, he was new on the ladder, and I was coaching a new driver at the same time. I barked a couple times because, we were weaving in and out of traffic, and he made some new driver mistakes, and that brought out the growler in me. And the kid in the back going, okay, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. He's making a little list. But the point is, that's what the new officer needs to do, is just absorb whatever is going around him and learn what works, learn what doesn't, what's having a negative effect. And then touching that fence, don't be afraid to get out there and confront the issues and make mistakes. I've made huge mistakes as a leader. I've having been a Marine, I have reduced firemen to tears in anger, which I still regret to this day. I have made multiple mistakes, but you learn from each one. The key is that you learn and you don't repeat those mistakes. You know, Colonel Lowe, when he gave that speech, was not saying go out there and they're waiting for you to lead them and don't ever make a mistake. He didn't say that. He said, yeah, go out there and pursue that leadership, earn their respect. And in the process, you're going to make mistakes. But if you're upfront and transparent with them, and if they can see the real person that you are, trying to grapple with the problems with them and admitting your faults, admitting the things that you don't know, and never ceasing to pursue excellence, they will give you respect and they will follow you. That's what he was saying.
You know, so I can go ahead.
I was going to say, so going back to what you asked me specifically is those principles. The Marine Corps has principles. The Army has principles. You know, several presidents created their own list of principles. There's several out there. I like the Marine Corps because they keep it basic and they keep it simple. You know, partially because they're talking to Marines. We all know what that's like. But it applies to firefighters extremely well.
Well, before you get on to your principles, I just want to highlight a couple things. One, about observing. I think that is, for me, as a company officer, and I've been a lieutenant now, I think it's been about 16 years. The biggest thing for me is I do not want to repeat the things that I saw as a firefighter that were being displayed of the leadership of my organization or other organizations around me. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, like the people that were company officers when I was a firefighter were terrible. You are a product of your environment. And in my organization, it was really small. So they didn't have much for good examples for being leaders. They were learning as they go. And essentially, that's what I got to do. I got to learn as I'm going too. But I'm recognizing the things that did not work that they were doing, or the things that were, in my opinion, were a mistake that I did. I highlighted those things. I said, I'm not going to be this way. I'm going to be educated in this way. I'm going to set good examples so that when I get promoted one day, they're going to say, you know, Robbie Fisher, when he was a firefighter, he did this and he was capable of doing that. So setting good examples. And the one thing that I think has been hard for me to learn over these years is admitting fault, admitting when I'm wrong. You know, just the other day, I made a, you know, egregious error as a company officer in my actions. And afterwards, I mean, my point, how I handled it was absolutely incorrect. But what I wanted to get across never changed. It was my approach in dealing with the situation. Afterwards, I talked to the individual. I had to apologize, and I had to tell them that, you know, I want to make sure that you're clear and you understand why I was frustrated, and this is what I believe is to be true, but the way that I handled it was wrong, absolutely wrong. And that's been a tough thing for me, to learn to accept your mistakes and learn from them and move on. And so, I got it. Basically, you know, what's kind of started this whole, you know, why I asked, you know, let's talk about the young young officer and get them some experience. You know, a brother from Fool's chapter down south had texted me and said, "Hey, tell us about what we can do for the young officer and get him going." And that was one of the things that, you know, I was thinking, if I could give anything to the young officer, I would say, learn, take the examples that you're seeing from those that are ahead of you right now, make a list of things that are not working, and learn from their mistakes, and make your own mistakes. Know that you make mistakes. Be transparent with those mistakes. Don't try to hide behind them. As soon as you try to hide behind anything, you know, especially in the fire service, you're going to be ratted out, and you're going to have a hard time building up a strong reputation as a leader, as a company officer in the organization. So, but you know, at this point, why don't we get into your principles there, Ben? And just a quick reminder for those that are listening, 760-454-8852 if you want to call in. If you're picking this up on podcast, don't call. You can connect in live next time and maybe call in. So how about those principles, Ben?
Well, they're not my principles, so I want to make that real clear. There's nothing new under the sun in leadership.
They're not your principles?
No, they're the Marine Corps' principles. I didn't design them. I don't think the Marine Corps designed them either. I didn't hear what you said. It cut out.
They're God's principles.
We can get into faith at another time, but yeah, I agree with you on that. There are 11 principles that the Marine Corps highlights as part of its core values. And the first one that really jumps out at me is know yourself. And the reason that's so critical is because if you're not self-evaluating, if you're not aware of your weaknesses and your strengths, then a lot of the type A personalities that step up to leadership will completely misfire by not seeing the effect that you just described yourself about yourself. You know, you were trying, your mission was correct, your desire was good, but because you believe so strongly in those items, you perhaps overstepped your bounds as a leader. So then you have to be on the alert for those moments, and when you see them, you immediately go back and rectify the mistake you made. And that goes 10 times further than if you just said it correctly and walked away, which would perhaps be the better scenario. But the impact of your humility has a greater effect. I like to think of it as a broken leg. You mentioned that, you know, a lot of the leaders around you were people struggling to find their way through leadership just like you, and they're a product of their environment. That's exactly the way I feel about it. A lot of them have been great people that I've known over 20 years of fire service leadership, but their attempts at leadership have been as hampered as mine. Everybody has a broken leg. The key is turning around and looking at it. And one of the things I've always thought to myself as I deal with the frustration I have with a particular leader, and I calm down a bit, and I think, well, you know, he's not perfect, I'm not perfect, and I've got this broken leg, and I look back at it, and it keeps you humble, and knowing yourself, knowing that you're going to seek to improve those weak spots is a critical way of keeping that transparency and keeping yourself always aware of those mistakes that you make. And I'm not saying that you run around apologizing to everybody for everything that takes place that you're not sure about. You think you may have offended, you know, the cook, and now you think you're worried that you may have offended your nozzleman. I'm not talking about that. What I'm saying is when you breach the relationship you have with your follower, who is actually the person you're trying to serve, you know it. You know when you've gone too far, when you've stepped across the line of servanthood and become the authoritative, domineering person. And in the firehouse, that's not necessarily where we want to be a good 97% of the time. On the fire ground, quite often it's different. But in the firehouse, where most of our interactions take place, the guy that walks in kicking trash cans and demanding that you make coffee and, you know, why haven't we got the chores done yet, you don't want to be that guy very often because nobody will want to be working around you. But when you've stepped across that line, you know it. You know, I told you I made a guy, reduced a guy to tears. I've actually done that a couple times. I have an explosive temper that I have to keep under control. The drill instructor jarhead, which I was never even a drill instructor in the Marine Corps, it comes out like a demon that you thought you had repressed. And when you aren't on your guard, and that's a good way to describe it, is being on your guard on your own weaknesses and your own habit for mistakes. You know, if your problem is not listening to your people, being on your guard for that. So that's that first principle is seek self-improvement and know yourself.
And, so the next principle then is tactical and technical proficiency. That's going to be something that's going to be real familiar to the fire service, since that, you know, most of what we look for is kind of like a competency-based leadership, where the individual that, the leader is going to have to know something about what we're doing to lead. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, and then that's critical. You don't, as I see it in this category, be technically and tactically proficient. You can have two disasters. One is an officer who is not tactically or technically proficient, and therefore the leadership they provide, they may be a great person, and they may fill out your employee evaluation with all kinds of stars and rewards. And the downtime might be a lot of fun. He might be a great cook. He might be a real stickler for cleaning the firehouse. And the fire engine better be spotless, or whatever his particular trait might be. The lack of training, the lack of understanding the operations, the lack of department knowledge, the lack of knowing what we're going to do when we get on the ground, and having communicated that to the crew so that the crew is not in the dark. Those are critical things.
Uh-huh.
The reverse is true as well, and that's the other train wreck you can get into with this, is a lot of departments don't have a promotional system that is equitable to all the traits that are necessary in an officer. So you might get picked because you're senior. You might get picked because you're a really hot guy on the stick, and they want that talent. And just because you know everything there is to know about nozzle forward, or everything there is to know about driving a rig or working on a rig or being an EMS professional, that does not a leader make. And so sometimes technically and tactically proficient people are put in place as leaders, but they don't necessarily know how to lead people. What the Corps is talking about in that second principle is it's saying, as a leader, in all the other things that you do, you cannot leave this one behind, because this is where, on the professional side, on the battleground, this is where you're recognized as a leader. So we translate that to the firehouse. We all know stories of officers, you know, arriving on scene and just bumbling through a call because they don't really know what to do about the situation they're in, and they end up divulging that inadvertently by their actions. That's going to translate in the firehouse to a lot of talking behind your back, a lot of snickering, a lot of laughter, and a general lack of achievement as an officer. Knowing what the department plan is, knowing what your battalion chief is going to be doing, knowing what the senior captains on scene are going to be doing, that's your job as a new officer. And then getting with each of your firefighters and assuring them that you understand their value and their talents and where you intend to put those talents into play, so that when they arrive on scene, that they're not so much in the dark. And this is a real problem in small departments that don't have a standardized method established, and everybody just kind of does whatever they want. And I think it's less of a problem in a department like yours, where you have writing assignments and tool assignments, and you're operating on a specific tactical philosophy, and everybody on board knows that. You train on it together. It's a regular feature to life at Ladder 72.
Yeah. Hey, I got Richie. He got done with dinner. He ate real quick. I don't know how he ate that quick, but I'm going to bring him in here 1 second, and we can include him in this conversation we're having regarding technical and tactical proficiency. And for some reason, it just dropped him off. I don't know why it is. Richie, I know you're out there listening. Give me a call back, and I'm just going to put you right back into the show. So the third principle, then, while we wait for Richie to call back.
All right, number three is, these are all critical. I'm going to keep saying that this one's really critical, but they're all equally critical. Developing a sense of responsibility in your subordinates. There is nothing worse than feeling, especially in this young generation, what they're calling the millennials, they're rising to the occasion right now. And these people come with a confidence that is no less and no greater than what we had when we were young, but it is different. And whereas you and I were trained to put up and shut up and produce, these folks have a contribution to make right from the get-go, and they want to talk about it. They want to demonstrate it. They want to get on their own with their task as soon as possible. Thank you very much. I don't need to be watched the whole time. And not recognizing that is pretty detrimental to your operation. So the Marine Corps is saying that when you develop that sense of responsibility in them, we're talking about delegation. And also, we're talking about delegating, you know, presenting them with what they're responsible for as a firefighter, as a public servant, and educating them so that they understand what's expected, and then coaching them along the way, not with a grip around their neck.
Yeah, and, you know, and I just was able to get Richie in. He's in with us right now, and I know Richie just recently went to some leadership training at Quantico, Virginia, and
sweet.
That, yeah, sweet, you're in, dude.
Is that me?
That's you, Richie. And so maybe Richie can kind of enlighten us a little bit of what's kind of going on their front in regards to leadership stuff at the Chicago Fire Department.
Okay, yeah, head downstairs and get away from annoying everyone else in the firehouse. I'm up. So today I'm on the road. Me and another guy from the squad, we're at truck 24. It's one of the only single truck houses in the city of Chicago. There's a lot of single engines, but this is the only single truck, so it's some unique house. So
that's
I'm
a
just
dream
kinda,
house.
It is. They got a huge response for you, so pretty good chance for where I look at. Yes, you brought up an interesting thing, and I'm sorry to cut in, Ben. I would have been happy just listening to the time. Hopefully this has been good, and if you were on a topic and want to keep going, I can easily go back on hold. You just let me know.
Not a problem, boss. Keep going.
All right. Call me boss. I'm your friend. You know my name. Okay. So with that being said, in Illinois, what's kind of a unique thing, what has happened is simply this. I work for the Fire Academy, which is down in Champaign. It's about 2 hours from Chicago. That's my other job. So we teach, we work there, and we recently had a new director down there. Our former director was a Marine, was a colonel from the Marines. Our current director, ironically, worked for and with our previous boss, and now this new colonel, Royal Mortensen, is our new director of training. He's a Marine, a colonel of Marines. Could have possibly went higher, and a phenomenal man. He went to a local chiefs convention that we have in Illinois called the iChiefs, the Illinois Fire Chiefs Conference, something like that. And at being at this conference, what a lot of other department heads or chiefs were telling him is the fire service lacks leadership as a whole. That was their statement. Now, I'll be a little bit of a devil's advocate. I don't know how much of that is because they lack their own leadership themselves. They don't instill it in their members, or they're not providing it. I don't know how much is them just because they want someone to fix their problem and they don't know how to. So that's where this kind of came from. So all these chiefs were complaining to our boss that we need the leadership in the fire service. So them being a Marine, the type of person who says, okay, they form a committee down in Champaign at the Illinois Fire Service Institute to explore this. So the colonel says, I want you guys to develop, and there's a team of us that are doing this presently, and I'm the fireman level. He says, I want you to a cradle to grave leadership continuum from the new recruit to a chief department. And that was his thought process. And we're like, okay, how do we do that? So to go from there, he says, tell you what, there are four of us that went to Quantico. Never been to Quantico. Got sent to go there with our team. We got to go to a couple different schools. We got to go to their base school, which is where they train like the captain level, or their captain level. We got to go to their expeditionary warfare school, which is where they go to the next rank of, I believe it was major. And then after that, we got to go to their command and general staff school, which would be lieutenant colonels, the colonels, all of the schools, different ranks. And the big thing that was enlightening to me was what we have in the fire service and what is hard and what we found out is the military has an off-ramp to get rid of people. if you don't cut the grade, if you're not making the mustard, if you're not, you know, if you're not meeting up to expectations and you're not either moving up, then you're moving out. And that's their philosophy. You're moving up or you're moving out. We don't have that in the fire service. Sometimes we have to take people, absorb them, work with them, try to work and adapt them. We don't have that. So we kind of recognize that we're a little bit disadvantaged. The other disadvantage that we are in the fire service compared to what we learned in Marines is they all go to the same place, get the same training the same way. In the fire service, the whole country, how's the fire academy up in Alaska compared to Seattle, Washington, compared to Chicago? It's taught with different terminologies. That doesn't happen in the Marines. It's the same across. So it was easier for them to get that common thread. And so that's what we're trying to do and we're working on. We're trying to identify what the Marines' common threads and values were. What are those common values? What are those common attributes that they carry out? Who we are and what you do. So it was pretty phenomenal experience. You know, some extraordinary Americans and heroes for our country. And two pretty amazing things happened to me personally that's changed me. It's made me change myself, my thought process, and how I am. And I'm almost done, guys. I'm sorry if I'm rambling and on a soapbox here. One was you do not become an officer easily in the Marines unless you have some type of formal education. And that had a profound effect on me because I'm about four classes shy of my associates to my parents have begged me for years to get. It's a true story. I mean, I could have had it years and years ago.
I understand. I know where you're at.
So I can ignore that. Well, now, after my trip to Quantico, every Saturday, now I'm in math class. Next will be an English class. Next will be social studies, humanities, and now I'm going to go to a bachelor's program. Because of my trip to Quantico, something clicked for me there, Ben. You know what I mean, Rob?
I understand. And good for you in doing that.
If these men and women of the military, as young as they are, making critical thinking, making ethical and moral thinking, and they think you need education for that, and I for them to kill people just to defend our nation, when you know what? Not true. It was amazing to see some of the exercises they did to develop leaders. And we don't have that. We don't have it at that level. That's what we're trying to do. When we were at the basic school, we met some phenomenal people there. And all this through our colonel at the Fire Institute, was the commander at two of the schools there, which is rare. Most people command one school. He commanded two different ones there. He was highly respected. So he had the ability to get us there. And when we were there at the basic school, we sat down. They gave us a card, what their values are, justice, prejudice, you know, honor, courage, commitment is their three main core things that they learn at their infantry boot camp. So it was pretty awesome to see. They also gave us a copy of the U.S. Constitution. So we're like, wow, this is neat. Just listen to their how they, at the basic school, form leaders, how they make decisions.
Hey, Richie, you broke up there for a second. They gave you a copy of what?
U.S. Constitution.
Did you catch that, Ben?
No, I didn't. In fact, you're getting kind of scratchy, too. No, I didn't.
I said they sent us a copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, U.S. Constitution.
Oh,
gotcha.
Yeah.
It was a little booklet. And that's what they give all the Marines in this card. So as our day proceeds to end, we were asking, hey, where should we go out to eat? They recommend a place there called the Globe in Laurel. Okay. Well, we go figure we're at the wrong gate. They didn't even think it was open today. Had a beer or two with them at the club, and awesome. Turns out we go out the wrong gate than we thought we were, and we pass this place, and there's cars a lot, so we pull in. Well, a retired Marine owns it. His name was Rick Spooner. Rick Spooner, I believe, and I could have the years wrong, but I want to say he's in his 80s, if not 90s. He may be close to 90, and I apologize for not knowing his age. He was in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. He retired a major from the Marines, and he has this restaurant. In this restaurant is nothing but memorabilia and history and tradition of the Marines. makes us think about us, the fire service, history, tradition. What is traditional, what is our history, and what would you be? And I'm believing I'm going somewhere. Just I'm sorry, I'm long about away. So we're at the bar.
You're doing fine,
we haven't. Okay, we're at the bar. We haven't met this gentleman yet. And he said, hey, the owner is here. Really? Who is he? He tells us the story. Because ironically, he's out back with a glass of wine and a cigar that he kind of came up with his son, also Rick Spooner, also a retired major from the Marines who worked with our director of training. And so we go out, introduce ourselves to four of us. It was Lou Lake, who's actually a member of Southside Pools, and then the assistant director and associate director from Champaign, a guy named Roger Lunt and Brian Brower. So it's us four. Go out, meet him, meet his son. He says, finish your dinner. Nice meeting you. So we go inside, have a...
You see what you say.
Be safe,
I'll be back. Remind me, we should be quick.
I just kicked him off. He said he'll be back. It should be quick. It's just one of those five alarm fires that they have there in Chicago.
Yeah, they have those every day, don't they?
I mean, I don't want to get off, you know, at all on this, but because I want to keep to your principles and you know, I kind of want to keep on applying it to the fire service But did you see their five alarm fire that they had the other day? I mean the cold. I know you are used to cold like that. In Washington, we're nowhere near that. I know, you know, some brothers from Left Coast Fools should be listening tonight. I know they sure as hell have no clue of what the cold is that they had in Chicago. I mean, that was a mammoth fire with some serious weather.
Yeah, well, you know, our weather is pretty intense, but I reserve a little bit of extra respect for guys in the north, around the lakes and the northeast, because the wind chill that we generally don't have is every bit as brutal. It can be -5 in Chicago and 30 below here, and the wind chill can make it feel just as bad. And when we suffer is when we have wind chill in addition to our 30, 40 below. Then we're taking the cake. I think we get the award at that point.
Yeah. Well, the guys in California, wind chill to them is when it drops the temperature down to into the 70s when it should be in the 80s, and that's called wind chill. Okay, so let's get back to the principles. We were talking about sense of responsibility and subordinates. Anything you want to add to that before we move on to the next one?
Well, by giving this young generation or any subordinate the opportunity to take on ownership and put his personal stamp on a project or a task, you get to see what they're made out of. And whether it's pretty much a hands-off deal or whether you're like, oh, this is not good, and you have to step in and guide them, you're learning about them. You're learning about them as a person, which incidentally the younger, this new generation values a great deal that you know them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are learning your style and who you are, and it builds respect. It builds confidence. If I've got a guy on my crew who's just a little bit shy of all there, if I've invested my time in him and I've gotten to know him, then, you know, Richie's right. We can't flush people like the Corps can. So I either throw my hands up and walk away, or I engage, get to know the guy, understand what makes him tick, and learn the things about communication with that person that will get him on the right track. And yes, maybe for a while, that means I'm babysitting. But, you know, I've seen a lot of success in the environment where I work with people that you would normally write off. But you give them some time, you give them some passion, you show them that you're listening and you're waiting to see them perform, they'll rise to the occasion, because that person had the guts to go after this job in the first place with whatever difficulties they brought to the job. So there's an element of respect you have to give right off the bat, unless they're just completely clueless about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I remember all throughout my career, it always seems like you were told, that, you know, this generation that's coming in is not as good as the previous generation. And I was in a sense, you know, at some point I was believing that. I was thinking, you know, I was looking behind me going, man, they don't know how to do this. They don't know how to do that. And the first person that I really ever heard come out and say, you know what, they're just a different generation, they're just as good, was Ed Hatfield. Chief Hatfield was doing his captain's college, and I was sitting in one of his classes, and I remember him saying that. And I started thinking a little bit more about it and realizing that as generations come through the fire service, there are stars in every generation. There are superstars in every one of those. But, you know, we all are a little different because of our environment is a little bit different than what we came up in. And another person that speaks out on this on a regular basis, Bobby Halton, you know, at the convention in Fairbanks, sitting around chatting with him, you know, and when he's preparing for his speech, he's pretty passionate about the fact that these are the kids that we are saying, you know, have to be stimulated in some respect, or, you know, they don't have the same work ethic that we do. Well, these kids are the ones that are in our United States military defending this country. And it's this generation. Well, how is that possible? And when you think about it, you sit back and you really think about it, how is that possible? Maybe we were wrong, you know. Maybe we were wrong. Maybe what you're saying is maybe that's true. Maybe what we got to do is just find out what makes that, you know, that kid tick, and when we do that, then we have that control mechanism. Maybe it's not them that needs to change. Maybe it's us that needs to make a modification.
Exactly.
So, I'm done.
Well, you know. Well, just to strike home at what you're talking about, you know that I'm sure you've known an officer in your area who, you know, he comes over and he tells you how, you know, we got this guy, and you may be chuckling a little bit like firefighters do about somebody in the train there. He's looking like he's a wreck, and where'd you find that guy? You know, you make your little comments, and that's us. We pick at each other. And that officer says, oh, you know, he's got issues. I'm going to get rid of him as soon as I can. I can't wait till he transfers, or, you know, whatever that department's method is of getting rid of the undesirable. I beg to differ with that officer. There are people that are absolutely frustrating to deal with. And the young generation doesn't tick in exactly the same way we do. But what I've learned about leading these young people is that as youngsters came in and we sat in the corner, we kept our mouths shut, and we took whatever abuse was thrown our way until we'd been there long enough to earn respect and were allowed to make a contribution. These guys don't function that way. What they're waiting for the minute they walk in the door is to be included in the group. They want to be shown what to do. Give me a chance to succeed, show me what you want, and then give me some feedback. And I want to be challenged, by the way. They're very aggressive, and their work ethic is phenomenal, but don't expect them to stand around gloating over it, because there's another challenge on the horizon, and that's what they're looking at. They put the other one aside if they've completed it already. And if you don't have those challenges for them, if you're working in a slow department, if your department's expectations are extremely low, then that's what you're going to get out of them, because they've got other things that, you know, Facebook will take their attention, or they'll be wanting to work out and marvel at their muscles just like our generation did. They're not going to waste time standing around waiting for you to make a decision. And you give them a challenge, they will show you their work ethic. And that takes us right into the fourth leadership principle, which is make sound and timely decisions. And for the young officer, looking at the all the principles of size up, the things you're expected to know as an officer, the administrative work, all the various things that you have to put together in your head as you're arriving on scene, whether it's an EMS call or a hazmat call or technical rescue call, the amount of information any individual fire officer is expected to be proficient at in the modern fire service is excessive. And so there's that sense of, I can't get a grip on all these things, so I'm just going to wing it when I arrive on scene, and hopefully no one's ever going to notice. And the truth is, they need to be well-versed in those things, well-versed in size up, and consolidate it into a list that they can manage that's inclusive of everything that they're supposed to know. An example of this, you and I were talking earlier about basement fires.
Mm-hmm.
The firefighters in my company, including the medic unit that is coupled with us, they know that one of the first things I want to eliminate on arrival, because of the amount of line of duty deaths relating to basement fires, I want to know that this is not a basement fire. I want to know if there's a basement there. And if there is a basement, is it on fire? If not, now we can proceed with a different element of caution. I'm going to eliminate that first if there's any reason to suspect that it's there, because of these, by looking at that line of duty death report, I've come to the conclusion that my size up must include that, because it's a problem. It's getting missed. People aren't doing their size ups. They're charging in the front door and going right into the basement. I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to have to explain how I lost a kid right into the basement seconds after arriving on scene. So that's part of my size up right off the bat. And as far as just making decisions and quickly and timely, that comes with experience, but you need to find a way to practice it if you've got a slow station. My uncle used to tell me, go to a busy house, and I tried to explain to him, there's only two houses in that apartment, uncle.
One goes this amount of calls, the other one goes the same amount of calls.
Yeah. But, if you're a new officer, a lot of new officers have little babies and a new wife, and they're trying to buy a house, and there's so much that comes with that time in life, but you have to be realizing that absorbing more than what the department is asking for is critical, because no one is going to hold your hand and no one is going to say you must know these things and these things and these things, because you're not getting the experience that you need on a regular basis. So you have to make that up somehow. And it's just nice to have a mentor, but the majority of young officers don't have a mentor other than someone they've spotted in the distance that they keep their eye on because they respect them.
Yeah,
Do you understand where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do. And I'm going to keep to the principle here, but I do want to make a point, because you did say earlier about mentoring, and we were talking about answer Dormeyer's question that he texted me was, about what do we need for the young officer, and one of the things that I would want to hit on is find somebody that's at your level or higher, and make them your mentor. Connect with this person, talk to this person on a regular basis, make this person somebody that you can bounce stuff off of, and use them for your future development, because it's crucial to your development as a company officer, a strong company officer in the department, and it's crucial to your future development to promote up further, be it captain or battalion chief or whatever it is. But going back to the make sound and timely decisions, it reminds me of George Patton's quote, a good plan today is better than a perfect plan tomorrow. Now, that can be looked at two different ways. That could be just go half cocked in and using your basement fire, get in, put the fire out, and you can make a serious mistake. And I don't think that's what he was saying in his quote. I think what he's saying is, if we are going to take this problem and we are going to treat it like we are a carpenter, not a framer, you'll never frame the house. And that what we want to do is come together with a plan a plan that can be adjusted. You know, this is where that living document and everything else that people talk about way above our heads. But that's what a plan, that's what a plan is, you know, initial plan, get things going. And then from there, we can adjust to the need. So taking what Patton says and using your basement fire, you guys are going to stretch the line. Everybody's thinking the line's going through the front door because that's the main egress and entrance to the building. And that statistics show that we find most victims in that path. It's the easiest way to get to the fire typically. It's where we can stay oriented to the fire. But while they're doing that, that's plan A. While they're doing that, you're adjusting to make sure that there's no plan B that needs to be done. And that's with your walk around and confirming that you don't have a fire in the basement. If you do, change your plan. Okay? Now we're going to make a perfect plan because now we know exactly where the fire is. If there is no fire down there, we're following plan A that everybody else had started on because they know exactly what we're going to do.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. And being willing to make that change in the plan. Now you can talk about this in the firehouse as well. I kind of chuckle at myself sometimes because as I get older, and in our department there's decisions made all day long about how to get the guys off to their responsibilities at class on the campus. We're down off campus in the middle of the west side of town. And I've got a limited amount of vehicles to get them to class. They have to still respond out of class. And so we're constantly making seat assignments and rearranging the situation. And one of the soundest and timeliest decisions I can make is to turn to the lieutenant, who usually has a better grasp of what classes the guys are taking because he's a student himself. And I'll just say, as soon as you get all that figured out, let me know what the result was. So I kind of chuckle at myself because as it builds in intensity, one of the best decisions I can make is to delegate to the one who's dealing with the problem right up front. But the guys need to see you make your decisions. And if a problem shows itself with that decision, don't be afraid to correct it. Don't be afraid to adjust the decision. Respect the leader. Yeah, they're going to respect the leader who's aware of his mistake, and instead of making excuses, for example, the other night, as I'm getting older, I can't see as well, and we're looking in the map book on a call the other night, and I'm not finding the address, and I'm getting really frustrated, and I wanted to throw the map book out the window, to be honest, because it's inadequate, and I would love to be on a CAD system in the modern world or have a computer screen that tells me exactly where to go. But that's not the case in Alaska right now. And we got on scene. Turns out it's not in the map book. That's why I couldn't see it. It wasn't my eyesight. But
you don't need a magnifying glass? Like, I'm starting to feel that now. They made the map book smaller lately.
Yeah, and I need a magnifier. I need my reading glasses or something to be able to see those tiny little numbers. So instead of making lots of excuses about why I couldn't find it, it's best to just say, you know, I should have brought my reading glasses and pass it to someone who can read it. Or, you know, in that case, that didn't apply. It wasn't even in the map book. But if I had thrown a fit and tossed the book across the dash or flung it out the window, you know, stomped around, there's no respect in that. And I have done that. You know, I have been so frustrated and embarrassed at what took place, either at my own failure to prepare or my frustration with the circumstances as I receive them. And you end up throwing excuses around, and there's no respect in that.
Yeah.
So you make your decision, and when you make your adjustment, you don't make excuses about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I got a caller I'm going to bring in, and hopefully this time, I know we got Richie in last time without any problems, and then the other caller, I don't know why we weren't able to get him in, but I'm bringing in a caller right now and let him be a part of this conversation. Brother, pull up a chair. You're with us.
Hey, guys. DJ Stone from Florida here.
Hey, brother. How you
doing,
Tom?
DJ?
Very well, very well. It's good to listen to you guys. I work in a small city department on the beach here in the Panhandle, just east of Pensacola and west of Destin, Florida. I don't know if you guys know where that's at on map there. More like Alabama. More like Alabama instead of Florida. But anyhow, I appreciate listening into the conversation, you know, and getting a little bit of wisdom. I'm a newly promoted officer myself, 11 years on the job here, and I've
awesome.
Been in an officer position for, thank you very much. I've been here for about a year, and I was lucky to have a father that retired as a chief in the area, and my brother is a battalion on the same job, the same department. So I think the mentor thing shit you're hitting on earlier was absolutely vital. But what I think maybe that exists now, and I'm talking to you about it right now, the fact that this communication, the internet's kind of changed everything when it comes to a form of mentorship for a lot of rural fire services or like suburban departments like myself. You know, we're able to network with people with vast amounts of experience and communicate via email and these talk shows and so much on the internet, it's almost overwhelming. You don't know where to start sometimes, but you know, obviously fire engineering is the number one place for me to start personally. But that's one really good way to get mentorship that's not really available in your immediate surrounding, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll tell you, this has come up a couple times. You can, you know, use Facebook or whatever. Those are all great mediums to get some information somewhere. And, but one of the troubles that I'm starting to notice is that people are either promoting the wrong thing or promoting, well, I'll just say just they're promoting the wrong thing. And so these younger firefighters are on Facebook or wherever it is, and they're like, you know, look at this great ventilation job, and you're sitting here, you know, somebody that has some experience with ventilation and going, man, there's some mistakes that are being done here.
Yeah.
And it can create a big problem. And then the other thing is, you know, YouTube is awesome. It's awesome. But what we got to do, the thing that frustrates me, I'm learning as I'm going too, but we've got to look at when we use YouTube as purely just look at what's going on. Don't break down if the guy, you know, that department should have stretched a second line. No, look at the building. Look at the fire. Look at the smoke. Look at everything that's going on there. All the other stuff. All that other stuff is you don't know that department. You don't know all the circumstance. You're
right.
Not there. You get to see one angle of the camera. But people that blow people apart over their tactics or something, man, that is going to be disastrous. I see that this is going to be in the future. This could potentially be a problem for us as an organization. And I'm just giving the backside of your point, but your point is great, is that utilizing talk shows like this, utilizing Facebook, connecting, you know, I consider Bobby Halton a mentor of mine. Well, you know what? Bobby Halton doesn't live anywhere near me. I would never be able to communicate with him if it wasn't for stuff like this and be able to bounce things off of him. So absolutely. Just, you know, I just, while everybody's listening, I caution people to be careful about our position on things, and be careful about when you're going to push something through and you're going to share it on Facebook, and maybe read from some of the guys that got a little bit of experience and see what they're saying about it before you go and say that, you know, this is the best way of doing something. But that's all I want to say.
You know, I think too, the idea of self-awareness, there's a lot of people that are firefighters, maybe aggressive, mostly type A. We don't realize, you know, being self-aware coming into this position. I was lucky enough to be humbled by my brother, my dad, and others, you know, and for my eyes to be open on what to expect, and I'm thankful for it, even though I'm brand new at this, a year deep into it, you know, I think I was able to avoid some major pitfalls. And just while I'm talking about it, one of the things was advised by a good friend of mine what I did was email 5 different well-respected officers in my department and surrounding. I asked them, what are your top 5 things to do and not to do as a new company officer, man? And I'll tell you, I got some really good insight, you know, from these guys, and was able to put a thing together and been steady building it ever since, because I fully plan on passing on what I know and what's helped me in this process to produce – a productive leader, not somebody who's completely unaware of their own self, and move into this and, you know, try to ramshot over everybody.
I applaud that. I think that is a phenomenal way to go beyond your boundaries, especially in a tiny department. Not everybody's a leader, and just because you're in a leadership role doesn't mean you're acting as a leader. And so the people below you may need to seek outside, and it requires a little tact. You certainly want to guard your speech, but that's an awesome way to go about it. And, you know, the other thing about mentoring is that, at least my personal opinion, my experience with mentoring, is it never works if the mentor, the wise old sage, goes around saying, hey, I'd like to mentor you. What do you think about that? That doesn't work. Because quite often the person that you would like to see excel the most isn't there yet. They're not at a point where they want to listen to you. And they don't commit. What really works very well is the person, educate them that they need to be mentored, and then turn them loose. And they will go and seek out someone, and they go and they say, will you mentor me? That is what needs to happen, because now you're telling them, the wise older guy, you're telling him that he's of value to you, you want to hear what he has to say, and you're listening. And that is much different than him trying to go farm his information out to people that aren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
DJ,
go
ahead, bro.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, DJ, I didn't know if it was just a pause, and I said I appreciate you calling in, I applaud you for looking, you know, as Ben had said, I applaud you for looking out and doing the mentor thing. And one thing I wanted to make comment, and you had said it when you're comment earlier, is make sure whatever you do, your brother and your dad gave you some connections there. Not necessarily connection to get the job, but where they helped you out is anybody that grew up in the fire service as a kid knows that they know a little bit of what's expected of them. They know a little bit of the, you know, what goes on in the firehouse. And so that's one less stress, one less thing that they have to worry about when they are, you know, at the academy or whatever. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. But that can, you don't need to have a kid to do that. You know, if you have a son and my son's not going to be a firefighter. He's going to be in the casino, gaming, and hotel industry. And I'm cool with that. But you know what I'm going to do? I've got this experience that I'm going to pass on down, and that is key. What you said is you got to be passing it on to somebody. If it's not your own kids that want to get in the fire service, find people that are around you that are seeking knowledge, and make sure you're passing it on to them.
Well, I just want to say one more thing. One, being the example, nothing takes the place of that. I think y'all mentioned that earlier. I would never ask anyone under me to do something that I can't physically do, or I don't display myself, whether it's a character trait or a physical trait. One, and two, I said this the day I started, and I'll say it until I retire, is I want to be the boss that inspires, because that's what I wanted when I was a firefighter and a driver. So I think if people work to be that inspiration, you know, because you're serving the people first, you're serving your firefighters, I don't know that you can go wrong being the inspiration that you always wanted to work under, you know.
And you just said the key thing, and that's service. I don't know who said it first, but I stole it. And when I'm at the academy and I've got the cadre of drill instructors together with me, we go by one motto and one motto only, and that is, I am not here for me. I am here for we, and we are here for them. And that sets yourself aside. A really great leader may never be known. His name may never be chiseled on a brass plate anywhere, but he's the guy that sets himself aside for his people. And getting the average firefighter type A, as you mentioned, personality to recognize that it's not about them, and that if they want to be successful, they set themselves aside. That is a difficult task to teach them that, but if you can get that across, that is a gold nugget right there.
Hey, DJ,
if I'm the example, they, you know, go for it. So,
Is it DJ? DJ, right?
Yes, sir. It is.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in my college class that I'm in right now, I'm working on my BA in public safety and emergency management, and I've taken a class that's called Servant Leadership, and it kind of that's what got my idea going with, hey, you know what, Richie had asked me, or had asked all of us on the board, anybody willing to take over the talk show for January, and I got an idea. And I wanted to talk about leadership. And I know the guy to go to, so that's why I pulled Ben in. But servant leadership is a great program, and that's kind of what we're talking about right now, you know, serving those that are our followers. And if you ever look up the name Robert Greenleaf, he was the CEO of AT&T for a number of years, and he developed this program. And it was he wrote a document back in the 70s, And I think it's you should be able to get it on the internet. Just type in Robert Greenleaf and servant leadership, and read about some of that stuff. And it's pretty easy reading, but it's good information. And I think it falls suit to exactly what we're talking about today. You wouldn't think that you could say in the Marine Corps it's a servant leadership, because it seems a little soft. It seems kind of it's almost like a paradox to say servant leadership. But it truly is. I mean, that's what we're looking at doing is taking care of the people that are our followers and making sure that they know that we truly care about them and want the best for them. And in doing so, the result is always great leaders. So, well, I'm going to let you go so I can bring on so I can bring on another caller. But it was great talking with you, DJ. Thanks for calling the show, look forward to maybe meeting you one day, and good luck with your endeavors in the future.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, brother.
Take care, DJ.
Thank you. You too.
Hey, Ben, I've got Richie online. I'm going to bring him in, and I'm going to pause for one quick second while I say hi to my wife that just walked in the door.
Okay. I'm going to pour some more coffee.
All right. You're on, Richie.
Hey, Richie.
Hey, Ben. What's up, Ben? How are you?
I'm doing good.
You got me?
Glad to see you back safe and sound. I can hear you.
Okay, cool. The show going?
The show's going good. I've never done anything like this before, and I have a tendency to ramble off subject and talk all over the map, but Rob's doing a great job of keeping me on track, and we're hitting the things he had planned on, but we're also getting some great feedback from other folks and getting some good conversations going.
I wanted to tell you that
I'm extremely envious that you got to go to Quantico, because they used to tell me that you never stop being a Marine and there's no such thing as an ex-Marine, and that is the absolute truth, but it doesn't kick in until you've been out of the Corps for a while. And just about the time you're really thankful that you're not in the Marines anymore, you suddenly realize you brought the Marines with you and you can't get rid of them.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Ben, because if you have time, I don't screw up your program. I'll finish the story I was telling if there's enough.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right. You left off talking about Rick Spooner. And so as we finished our meal with Rick Spooner Sr. back in the patio, whoever, have some beverages, we all smoke one of his cigars, and in doing so, we're telling him why we're here. We were sent here to see what we can learn from the Marines in leadership and about followership to carry over to the fire service and how we can use it or what we'd have to adjust. And because there's a tremendous parallel, I think we'd all agree, between the military and the fire service. So as we're sitting here telling our experience at the basic school, like I was telling you, Rick Spooner, who I didn't find out on that run, like real quick, is 88 years old. He was born 1925. He pulls out of his coat that he's wearing his copy of the U.S. Constitution. And that was the other truly amazing thing for me, was being able to go see the education value they put on it as far as education and how important it is to being a leader. And the fact that I meet this Rick Spooner, 88 years old, fought three major wars, and in his pocket to present day is this copy of the U.S. Constitution. I was floored. You know, I mean, here's a guy who's been around the country, and the belief that was brought years ago from the Marines is still here today, and there was an example because they gave it to us when we showed up today, and he pulled it out when we met him later that evening. It was a phenomenal experience.
Right.
So
that
whole
cool.
trip, yeah, I mean, the whole trip drastically changed me personally. And to tie in to what you guys were talking about, we recently did the chapter president's meetings. Who was there? Buse was in it, if I remember correctly, from you guys.
He was.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, in our president meetings, a resounding theme kept coming up through the local chapters. Mentoring and leadership. How do we mentor our Fools chapters, and how do we show them leadership, or what kind of leadership are we offering to them? And I'm like, holy, as we're tackling this in my job and in the fire service, here it comes up on our Fools program. Blew me away again. Like, I can't believe hearing this. This must be that important, and I can't believe I never realized it or recognized it. So, as a testament or as a goal, and I'll jump on to what you guys are saying about the whole weight loss thing, I definitely need to jump on that. So I'm hoping my next Fools convention is in September. I can reduce some weight myself and be in better health. And us as an e-board can offer something to the locals, an avenue for leadership and mentoring. And that's my personal goal with our e-board, the Fools International's goal, because we all make up the organization. And hopefully that's what you're talking about.
Are you back
there,
Ron?
Ben? I'm back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, I got a message from on the board saying that I'm sounding a little I'm not so clear. Can you hear me very well?
I can hear you good now. Earlier you got a little broken up, but you're good now.
Okay.
Hey, Rich, I wanted to point out to Rich that you know, and I'm sure you know this, I'm not telling you anything new, but the Fools are just a reflection of the fire service in a lot of ways. When I gather together with my chapter, and I'm beating my head on the table because I'm marveling at how ADD we all are. It's the same experience at work all the time. So if we're having a struggle with passing leadership down in the fire station, we're going to have the same problem at the Fools to some extent. I think one of the answers is something that we're kind of embracing in our own chapter, at least I'm trying to head it there, is that I'm trying to bring forward people that want to be president when I step aside and give them the opportunity to run things, and I just take a back seat, not abdicating my responsibility in the matter, but and not tapping any one person. But anybody who wants to fulfill that role on the e-board, they get themselves into that position where I can work with them, and then I mentor them long before I step aside, because we have to build that into our organization, or we're going to resemble the old version of the American Army, which was vote your officers in, and they may not have a clue about what they're doing, but they were popular, so you put them up there. And the Fools have gone way beyond the ability to do that. We're too big of an organization. We're too involved in so many things. Our leadership needs to be chosen. It needs to be mentored, and you know, yes, voted in, but the options to vote for should be people that meet the criteria.
Definitely.
That is definitely Go ahead, Richie.
No, I was just going to say it's good to hear, and I know, unfortunately, I missed Ben's leadership presentation in Alaska this year because I was doing something else. I don't know where I was. Oh, I did the tour, or the Type 6 construction tour, so I missed that, unfortunately. But it's good to hear. And, you know, everyone spoke really highly of the leadership presentation you did, and that's really some resource I'm hoping to maybe tap into in the future, and something we look into for the convention, and something we'll have to talk about or chat with offline in a phone call or two.
I'd be looking forward to it, boss. Hey, just before you go, Rich, wanted to tell you, you were talking about the Constitution and the Marine Corps. And one of the things I remember very clearly about my training in boot camp was that they made it, and it came up again later on when I was being trained in crowd control and riot gear and that kind of thing. One of the things that the Marine Corps made very clear to us back in those days was that you will never be put in a position. We will never place you where you have to attack the people of the United States. We will never put you in a position to open fire on our citizens, our people. The Marine Corps, as wild and fearsome and extreme as the Marine Corps is, the Marine Corps believes first and foremost in the American citizen. And that's a component in why that Constitution is there, is because it's a key thing of our country, is keeping our warriors in touch with our people. And that translates to me in the fire service. You know, the chief's always talking about, remember what the customer needs and wants versus what you want to provide. And that makes a lot of sense to me. We need to remember that we're public servants first and foremost. They pay our paycheck, and they get to dictate the terms of service.
Definitely. I mean, we're selfless. That's what we're here for. Selfless service is what the military does, what they preach, and that's what we need to look at. And I was thinking to do some required reading for our trip. We had to read Leading Marines. We had to read Warfighting. I read both those books. They were awesome to read. In fact, I should put it out to the whole organization to read, or if you maybe recommend a reading list for leadership, something we could have on our website, an avenue for people to go to read books that we agree on or talk about or like to see out there. For so on, to look for an avenue to start developing their own leadership if they don't have a process or an avenue to get it in their areas. And in that reading, it says every Marine is a rifleman. So in our little group, we needed to come up with something. We were thinking every member is a firefighter. Every member is a firefighter. The same thing, that parallel carries over. U.S. Constitution, I don't know if that fits for what we're doing, but how about the Firefighter Code of Ethics? There's our U.S. Constitution. Maybe that's where I think we need to go. You know, that's where I'm hoping to go, and that's where I'm hoping you'll help me with, and our e-board will do it, and we'll have something for this convention.
You know, hey,
amen.
Richie, you know, you're making a great point in that every Marine was a rifleman. You know, every Marine is a grunt, and you got to go through those gates before you go anywhere else. And that's kind of like, if we break things down to what we're expecting of our company officers, if a firefighter wants to be a good company officer, lead by example. Be the best that you can be as a firefighter. You got to go through those gates first before you can move on to being a company officer. Just the same as company officers looking to be in a BC. Don't start planning your retirement and looking at BC as the place to go and retire. Look at it more as, what am I going to need to do, not just to be a manager, but a great leader? And what skills as a company officer, you know, I got to be good at being a company officer to be a battalion chief, because if I'm going to lead company officers and firefighters below them, I want to have that reputation as being the guy that has done exactly what they have done. So I like that. And I think we could do that in our organization as the Fools as well.
Absolutely. You know, Rich, you mentioned that that the Marine Corps has the ability to teach the same thing to all its members, and that the fire service is broken up into all these different entities, and so the teaching varies. And that is one of the problems, in that, you know, how many tests per officer contain a list of leadership principles that is sound and worked through and purged of errors that every officer in the fire service can be tested on? Because that's not a component in your leadership training. The components are administrative work. There are group ethics, and there is how to counsel somebody and how to keep your fire station clean and how to fill out your AMFRS reports. There's a little bit on tactics, but so much of the true nuts and bolts of leadership and surrendering your interests to that of your people and putting your people first. That stuff's not there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you made me think of something right there real quick. When we were in Quantico, and the last day we met Lieutenant Colonel Christmas, Lieutenant Colonel Byron. I'm probably saying his name wrong. Nick Gonzo. And we met him at the command and training school. And they brought up ethical and moral decision-making. Now, at the time, there's a difference between those two. I don't know if you guys thought. I think they knew there was. I did not. And it pretty much puts me this way. And this is what we have to have. This is part of leadership. We don't teach what we don't teach. Ethical decision is between right and right. A moral is right and wrong. And we do these things. A lot of times we think of them, our decisions are kind of almost of a tactical aspect. Do we save grandma or do we save the kid? Who's in more danger? Whatever. If we had a rescue boat, they're both on the same floor, you're going to pick one over the other to rescue. That would be your ethical decision-making. Who do you rescue, the kid or the mother or the grandmother? Same hazard, same area, both rooms adjacent to the fire room, both in danger, you can only pick one. That's your ethical decision. Both are right. Both are right. Both are decisions you have to make. Neither one's wrong. What can you live with, though? Which one could you live with better if you had to? Moral, as we also know, is the decision-making between right and wrong. And that should be a clear cut, you hope. But I never knew that. When I heard that, if that would be way, like, oh, we gotta do this. We need to incorporate the leadership. And I think I said before, and you guys probably did, the whole followership. How do you know if you become a good leader if you don't know how to follow it? At that recruit level, you need to look, listen, and learn. You got two ears, two eyes, and even one mouth. Why is that? Listen and look twice as much as you speak. And
yep.
We can teach them how to follow before they can lead.
Absolutely.
Yep. Correct. I'm with you on that there, Richie.
I think that's it. I've talked long enough for you guys, so just take a little while out. I'm sorry if I talked too long, but to answer, go back to what you said, Ben, and if I could ever tell you to go there, I would have to recommend it. We went to the Marines Museum, and I walked on that base, and there's two things in life that I have not done that I had a chance to that I regret at this point, or I regret, wish I could go back and change. One, I maybe had a chance to do some wrestling after high school and college. That wasn't that great, but even at the local junior college, could have some tuition out possibly or something. And I did, my buddies did. I think they had some unique experiences and exposure and some things that would, for life and just experiencing and being part of that. The other one was I almost joined the service when I was in high school. I was 17, and I started a goal of high school and wrestling parents of the year, and I did, and I didn't join, and I never did. So being on that base truly was like, wow. I was an awesome young Marines, and I'm not special out Marines or any other military organization. Please don't take that. I respect anyone of our benches and those that serve. It's a tremendous thing. But I sat there regretting the fact that I didn't serve, but proud of these young Marines that were there. And every one of these young Marines can thank us for being firemen. Thank us for what we did. And says, man, I can't imagine going on a burning building. And we're like, what? You put your life on the line. That's what they're telling us. I mean, it was mind-boggling. But that's the type of character these people were, the character. And it was awesome to see. It was humbling. If you could ever go there, go. If I could go with you, it was phenomenal.
You know, I would say I would be stepping out of line if I said I was speaking for all Marines. But I know, and I have heard quoted multiple times, that when the Marines look up to somebody in the civilian world, they look up to firefighters. And as hard as that is to understand, you know, it just shows the kind of spirit that they believe we have and that they admire about us. And I feel a responsibility to live up to that. As much as I have put the Marine Corps behind me, it came right back because I found it was integral to who I am as a firefighter. And there's only two people I like to hang out with best, and that's a firefighter, and I like Marines. And the combination of the two, to me, is phenomenal because of the leadership elements you get, whether they're in a position of leadership or whether they're leading from down at the bottom. The Marines, they've got it. They understand it. And, yeah, I'm so glad you got to experience that. I'm envious.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, it's because of my boss and some role models and mentors that I have back home that steered me in that direction, because I was asked to go on this leadership development team to be the rank of new recruit and senior skilled firefighter, because I'm not a lieutenant yet. Hopefully someday I will down the road, or some years down the road. And that's my role in this. And they got all different people, different ranks helping out. And I said no more than once. No, I don't have the time. I can't. And now I'm busier than ever with doing that in school, and as we all are, and it's been the best experience of my life. Yet I said no. They wouldn't let me. They wouldn't say no. Mac McCass would not let me say no. One of my role models here, a guy that's kind of led me along. So it's been awesome. And, you know, once again, they had that insight in 4 or 2, 4 I didn't, because they've been down the road. They're a leader, and I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to lead. So.
Well, hey, brother, good, Richie, good for you, man, for going back to school. That is an important, I'll say it's probably in my top couple of things that need to be done if you want to be a strong leader in the fire service. So good for you on recognizing that. And you know, even though you had been delayed in finishing your degree, getting back to work on it. It's not easy when you have kids. And so I got another caller on hold, and I think we're probably going to be breaking away.
Put me on hold, I'm just going to listen to you guys. I may have to go, and if I do, I'm sorry. And nice job, thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm sorry if I took too long, and keep up the traditions. And for me, my saying is DPT, because I didn't write the duty of preparation. Keep it going, guys.
All right, brother. Well, if you're not back when we come back, you know, be safe tonight on shift.
10-4, thanks, Ben. Thanks, Rob. Thanks.
All right, brother.
Looking forward to seeing you again, Rich. That's awesome.
All right, so I got this other caller I'm bringing on in.
Okay.
You're on, brother.
Hey, guys, this is Jason Buist.
Oh,
yeah.
I would have. Well, when
I'm
you
off.
Called, you
I'm sh- off.
When you called, you should have told me. I should have known when I saw that area code.
Well, Richie get mad because I always pick on him.
What's up, Busey?
It's been great talking to y'all, but Jason knows my true leadership style, so I'm gonna have to leave.
You know, I'm kind of a student of leadership myself, and have never really been able to perfect it, as I'm sure a lot of people haven't. But you know, and I learned a lot from Ben. I worked with him for a few years, the captain at the university there, and learned a ton of stuff. And now in my current department, I was a fireman for a couple of years, and now as an acting lieutenant. And just some things that I've observed, and it basically mirrors what you guys are saying with just a little bit of a different take on it. I do a lot of reading. You know, there's learned a lot from the other the captains at my department, but I learned more, I think, from watching people outside my department, because I'm not as biased to their other things that happen. You know, I can only hear the clear message coming from those guys and things that I read. But one of the things that guides me is when I act up to that to officer position is, in everything you do during the day, is you got to keep in mind, am I doing the right thing? You know, it's one of our main things that we say in the fools is do the right thing. So everything you do during the day has got to mirror that. You got to always think, every time you take a step, every time you do something, every time you tell somebody something needs to get done, or you find something, you walk by that piece of garbage on the floor, you got to pick it up. All those little things, you know. The guys will see that, and they will respect you for making sure that you're doing the right thing. Even if you're not saying that you're doing it, just them observing you doing it is very, very important. Leading by example, you know, doing things that maybe others don't want to do, but bringing your guys into that fold, and not forgetting that you need to delegate some of those things too. You know, getting things done through others, but make sure that they want to do it, you know, promote that. And a lot of guys that I work with and people I've worked with in the past, and I've been in the fire service for about almost 17 years now, so I've worked with a lot of guys, people need to know how to follow. that's not always something that's taught these days. And, you know, you hear from a lot of the veterans of wars and some of the older Army and military services that, you know, they were taught how to follow. And a lot of times people try and lead, but they just don't understand why people don't follow them. It's because they don't know how. You want to be a follower, you have to have a leader, and leaders also have to have followers. It goes hand in hand. So sometimes you have to teach those guys how to be followers in order to be a good leader. Make sure that they're on the same page with you.
Hey, Jason, I think the trouble with teaching people how to follow or you know, I think in a sense we do have a way that we tell people to be followers, but it's not like that. It's not like we say you must be a good follower to be a good leader. What we tell people is shut up and just listen. You know?
Yeah.
And it works in some respects, and this kind of goes back to what Ben and I were talking about 2 hours ago or an hour and a half ago about, you know, that was a different generation. And those people that were coming in, that's how they learned to be good followers. They were told, just shut your mouth, sit back, watch. When I want an opinion from you, I will ask you for your opinion. And that was a part of the fire service, and it still is in the fire service today. But what we need to do now is the generations are changing, and the people are changing. They're you know, how they are motivated, how they're stimulated. All these things are changing, and it's the guys that have been around for a long time that are having a hard time understanding that. And we want to keep on driving the just you know what? I'm the officer here. I'll tell you what's going on, and they don't know how to work this angle of telling them to learn to do a good job of being a follower. So it's a terminology thing that I don't think that we really have been able to get our people to understand. But I completely agree with you, is that if you know, I must first be a good follower before I can be a good leader.
Yeah, it's
right.
You know, these guys, the younger guys that are coming in, they're very opinionated, and I know that because I'm one of those guys. You know, when I first started in the fire service in 96, I was very opinionated, and I always wanted to bite back, always wanted to get a piece of the action, the conversation, what was going on, and the guys would look at me like, you've been on the job 2 weeks. Why are you even talking? And I was, you know, a lot of people are instilled with that, you know, that filter, you know, the understanding that only speak when you need to and filter what you say so that when it comes out, it's meaningful and purposeful and it has relevance to the conversation. Don't just bite in there because you have to. And when you're doing training and things like that, it's these guys they're reading stuff that they've seen someplace else, you know, like, well, why don't we do it like Milwaukee and throw two ladders on the roof? And you say, well, because we got 4 feet of snow on the roof, it's going to be hard enough to get one up there. And then, you know, hopefully they understand that and bite off on it and kind of keep quiet. One of the best books I ever read on that was a book called Recreating the Fire Service by a Canadian fire chief. It's kind of an unknown book these days, but it really comes from the chief level, but it's very relevant to that company officer level. And he's basically saying in his book is, if you want people to do something, explain to them, get them on board with it. Why are you doing this? This is the reason why. This is why we should do it. This is why we are doing it. And this is why we're doing it this way, because it's relevant to us and this is how we're going to do things. And, you know, if you can understand that, getting people to understand you and get on board with why you're doing it, they'll be more willing to do it. And you're creating followers and, you know, you're making them want to do the things that you ask them to do.
You know, hey, Jason, I'm watching the chat board going while you're saying that. And Jeff Thompson, one of the other lieutenants on Ladder 72 on Delta Shift, he just posted that, you know, it's his observation that the new generation needs to understand the value in the order, not just because I told you so. If they don't buy into or understand the value of something, they will question it. And that's exactly what you're saying right now.
Yeah, it's if you get people to believe it and understand why you're doing it, they're much more ready and available to do it. You know, if you want them to cut a hole in a roof that's not 4x4 like you learn in your IFSTA Firefighter 1, but you want to make an 8x4 coffin cut, explain to them why you're doing it, why it's good, then go practice it, and then they'll get on board with it, and they'll be more willing to do it in the future.
Ben, are you still with us?
Yeah, I was. I'm nodding here. No, I was just going to say that if you're leaving without taking into consideration the things that Jason is talking about, and that the other lieutenant on 72 just mentioned, if you ignore those things, you may be the loudest leader on the block, but you're going to be marginalized very quickly by this new generation.
Absolutely.
They will be quiet. They'll be quiet while you rant and rave. They'll be quiet while you terrorize them. And the minute you walk out the door, they're going to turn to the officer, or they're going to turn to the peer, the informal leader amongst them, who is actually leading by example, educating them and explaining things to them that makes sense to them. That's the person they're going to follow, not the one that's making the most noise and screaming and barking, or instead of screaming and barking, is just sadistic about it. Those people are going to be marginalized and ignored. They'll still be there. They'll still be ranting and raving. They may become chief of department, but they will not be leading anybody because this generation has no interest in that kind of leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's harmful, too, is if they don't bite off on what you're saying and understand why you're doing those things, then you're going to step away from the table, go to your office, and they're going to throw you right under the bus, and then the other guys who are younger are going to chime right in. And then when you get on scene, you know, if you've got to cut that hole, they're going to go cut the 4x4 hole. They're not going to – they weren't paying attention, and they didn't bite off what you said. They didn't understand it, so they went back to what they knew to begin with. Getting them on board is pertinent and making them understand and, you know, and really crushing that dissension that happens after you leave by being that good leader.
And you can't get them on board if you haven't brought yourself to be tactically and technically proficient. So if you're the officer who's kicking back every day worrying about your next hunting rifle purchase and you don't consider the tactics of the one fire a month you get, then trying to get them to clue in on the tactics when you're required to teach them is going to be a losing proposition.
Yeah, and that is, if you get people to have the passion about the fire service and the things that we do as much as they do about sometimes football and baseball and the new hockey coming out, then if you can push that passion into the fire service, man, we'd be all a bunch of tough guys.
And what you're talking about, Ben, is, you know, is going back to principle number two, which was the technically and tactically proficient individual, which we've only got out of the 10 principles. We've only got about four of them checked off.
Although five has been well covered by our callers.
What is number five, Ben, real quickly? We'll keep Jason on. I don't know how Alaska can allow two people to be on the phone at the same time, but as long as we still have a connection where you both are on there, then we'll keep on talking.
The transformers are buzzing, and it's getting warmer outside, so we're doing well.
Right, it's minus, 35 now? So,
and dropping.
Setting the example is the fifth principle. And, you know, everything that's been said about setting the example is important. But the one thing that I feel is key about setting the example is you have to apply it all around. With your ethical and moral decisions. But also, when you have an order that's been handed down or you have a policy that's not popular, and even the administrative staff in the department are not abiding by it, there is nothing for that young officer or for that young officer's crew to tell them that they should take it seriously. But the way I have negotiated that throughout my career from the very beginning of being an officer was, okay, so the chief isn't doing that. So the fire marshal isn't doing that. So the deputy chief isn't abiding by it. The other captains don't abide by that. You work for me. I abide by it. And therefore, I can ask you to do the same thing. And they will respect that, because you're setting the example. And it might be, you could come up with all kinds of different episodes and scenarios where that would apply. And sometimes you're not popular for that reason. But when they see that it is important to you to abide by that policy or rule and set the example by doing it, they will comply with it and they'll respect you for that decision. It doesn't mean they necessarily agree with it, But they're gonna go along with it because you're establishing leadership and you're showing them how to follow. It's when we, you know, I've had myself rearranged a couple times for miscommunicating my intent and being reminded that I don't care if you don't like it, Captain. You need to set the example. And sometimes I get off track and I forget that that's my role. And it doesn't matter if I don't like the policy. It doesn't matter if I think the policy is short-sighted, immoral. Well, not immoral, that's a different story. But, you know, if I think the policy is detrimental to morale, I still need to set the example and abide by the policy while working behind the scenes to get the policy changed. But you don't show your crew that rebellious attitude that so many of our officers have because they weren't taught to not do that.
Well, I got a question for you, Ben, because I know that there's others that are going to be thinking this, and I've been in the situation myself. You know, a lot of the procedures or guidelines that we have, I'll say procedures because we don't use the term guidelines. I'd feel better if we did, but some of the things that come down from our administration, I absolutely do not like. And there are times that I take a position that, you know, this is what we're going to be doing. I don't agree with it, but that's what we're going to be doing. I guess my question is, when we as company officers and we're talking about as the leaders, we're looking down to our followers and we're trying to figure out a way that we can communicate with them and we're trying to figure out a way that we can encourage them, you know, to follow, when those are above us that are not doing the same thing. I mean, basically what we're saying is just bumping everybody up. You know, the chief officers are saying, you will do this. They're not explaining it very well. They're not got good purpose behind it. You know, it might be a reactionary thing. And as company officers, I guess my question then is that at what point do we take the position, or do we always follow no matter what? You know, because I think that can be dangerous as well.
I agree with you. It can be dangerous. And you can take what I said to an extreme and get the opposite result that you want. I'll take an example that I could grab is, you know, say the policy is you will always do a forward lay unless, you know, there's a darn good reason not to. But you prefer the methodology of using your tank water because you got plenty of hydrants. You don't see the point in the operation. You don't feel it's to our benefit. If you're going to deviate like that, I think you have to be on some pretty solid ground. And if you do so, fine. But you are taking upon yourself the responsibility for whatever takes place when you deviate. And as long as you're willing to accept that, I think, you know, that's an option. But I would be very hesitant. You know, it's kind of like choosing your battles. Think out, you know, if there's a policy you don't like, ask yourself, is it worth the fight for me to buck this? Or
yeah.
do I stake my reputation on it? If it's, you know, if the policy is every firefighter should have 50 cents change in his pocket so he can hand out coins to the street people and make sure they've got something, you know, something to eat. You know, you might not agree with that, but there's just no sense in fighting it. And if you deviate from it, you're not going to get punished, maybe.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, on the other hand, if the policy is that you will always have a charged hand line on any search, well, I would be hesitant to break that because there's a reason why they made that rule, and I may not agree with it, but the chain of events that could lead to a disaster, and that part of it was not obeyed, it can really make you pay the piper. And there's more to it than that. You know, it could be a broad policy, and there's ways to abide by the policy without having to drag the hose into every corner of the room. You know what I'm getting at. Think through those moments when you're going to put your reputation and your position on the line and say, I don't agree with this policy, and I'm going to stand against it. Because that's what you're doing if you don't obey.
Hey, Ben.
Go ahead, Jason.
I was just going to say it's kind of bites into what I was saying before about, you know, if you want somebody to do something, you need to have them buy into it. Well, I think it's company officer responsibility that when something comes down like that, for example, like they say you're always going to have a charge hose line, it's your responsibility to enforce it right off the bat, because the guys are going to look at you like, oh, my gosh, what the heck is going on here if they don't agree with it. It's your responsibility to say, all right, you know what, we're going to do it. I'm going to go, you know, and it's your responsibility to go find out why and try and buy into that. You know, if you buy into it and then you can explain it to your crew so they'll understand it coming from you, not just as an order from the chief or whoever put that rule out there. You know, if you buy off on it, that's great. You can explain it to them. If you completely don't agree because if there's a safety concern or something is, you know, not going to go right with your crew on it, then it's your responsibility to go the other way and say, hey, chief, this is what I think, and this is why, you know. And if they still don't agree, that's fine, but it's, you know, it's kind of our duty to uphold those rules and regulations as they come down. As long as there's not a life safety issue, it's our duty to buy off on it, think about it, contemplate it, and then if it's still not going to work or something's not right, it's our duty to bring it up. But once that decision has been made, we really have to enforce it at the same time.
Jason, those are career moments where you can't buck the system all the time, but it gets to a point where your cup is full, and for some officers in some departments, if you have to swallow another poorly thought out, poorly communicated, poorly directed order, you're just going to lose your mind. You have some decisions to make, and I know that it's hard to stomach the idea that you're just going to tell the guys, this is something we're going to do, and I know you don't like it, but I'm going to lead the way. When you're stuck in that position and you don't like the policy, you don't like the directive you've been given, but you realize that this is not yet the time to throw your helmet on the floor in front of the chief and demand a change or you're walking out the door, well, then your responsibility as a leader is to set your pride aside and coach your people through that difficult circumstance. Because when you emerge on the other side of it and there's a change at the top and the policy modifies, and I've been through this, you know, I told a brother officer, he told me one time, he goes, I don't know how much more of this I can take. And, you know, I love that guy with all my heart. And I said, brother, you and I and the others like us have to keep on the path, regardless of how many stupid orders, stupid directives, regardless of how, you know, difficult this is, when we come out of it on the other side, because we got years to go yet, when the person issuing these orders is gone and you come out on the other side, the department will need us to be standing tall, intact, holding the line. And that is the job of the company officer. Bad orders come and go. And if you've got to fight a life safety issue, then that's when you throw your job on the line. But other than that, you gauge very carefully what you throw your credibility at, and don't throw it away cheaply over a stupid issue. And I've done that before. And because you need to be standing, if you're an experienced, valuable officer, you need to be standing up with your respect and your value intact on the other side of that stupid order when that stupid order goes away, because it will.
And we could take the lessons that we were talking about earlier in this show about, you know, if you as a company officer start looking, observing what's going on around you, meaning up above you, and you start taking notes and you're going, you know, I think it's a waste of time for us to pull a hose line to the second floor and have a company on the hose line while we're doing search, and you can back it up, the reasons why, with data, then you know that maybe the chief or the operations chief or whoever's making this procedure is wrong in doing so. They're uneducated in the situation or whatever the reasoning is that the lesson learned there is that when you promote up into those ranks, you do not write an order like that without involving your company officers or without involving people that are, you know, that are tactically involved. I mean, that's like saying, you know, you want the input of what needs to be done from the people that are doing it. And if you're the chief of the fire department, your job is to manage the people. Your job is to manage the department. And if you come out with a procedure that is based in fully in tactics, and the guys are looking and going, the chief of the department, the last time he pulled a hose was probably 30 years ago. He never is out here. He's never at the fires, or she's never at the fires. You know, he sits behind a desk and he has these jobs to do. Well, that person should be going to his battalions and saying, what do you guys think about it? Well, this is what we're doing. I want you guys to assemble a team of individuals, company officers, firefighters, and battalion chiefs, and I want you guys to look into this matter because I feel uneasy with our people searching without a hose line. And then he gets his committee together. The committee comes up and says, this is what we want to do. They sell him on whatever it is. No hose, or, you know, the hose at the base of the stairs is a backup line for both the first floor and the second floor. And then he has to accept that. And that's going back to another principle of you got to have trust in the people. You got to have the trust in the people that you are leading, that when you've asked for their input and you value their input, when they give it to you, you cannot push it off as nothing and then say, I'm going to do it my way just because. Because now let's take that right back to the company officer, and we talked about this earlier. Company officer just telling a guy, do it because I told you so, and didn't explain or didn't take your input now. We're at different levels. You get my point?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And go ahead.
So
the other thing that plays into this, it's been my experience, because I'm fortunate to work for some quality officers, is that if I'm setting the example on what I believe the standard is, and I believe the standard is meeting the department's needs and is what the department wants to see, if I'm going in the same direction as the department wants me to go, we may not agree on every little issue, but there comes that moment when the football has got to be handed off and the decision has to be made quickly. And sometimes there's a tactic that's being thrown in that they don't normally want to use. They will turn to you and they will say, I know you've made this a passion. I know that you have studied this. I know you know what you're about, and I'm going to trust you with this. Run with it. And those moments are golden, and maybe they don't come very often. But a good leader at the battalion level, he may be struggling with his officers trying to get him to abide by whatever silly policy that the crowd is upset about. But if you have a reputation for upholding the company line and helping your followers see the value in even the smallest order, then you'll also be entrusted with extreme deviation because it's the right time and the right place.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. We've got 40 minutes left of the show. You want to continue moving through the last of the principles? I think we're moving on to principle number 6. You know,
yeah, we can wrap these up fairly quick, I think, if we don't get too chatty. Number 6 is knowing your company members and looking out for their welfare. And it's one thing to just cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure that you got your evaluation done. And it's one thing to go play racquetball with them after you get off duty or go to a CrossFit deal with them. It's quite another thing to involve yourself in their troubles and become a part of their family, or bring them into your family. And as you do so, you validate their contribution, and they begin to learn how to follow, like we were talking earlier. But also, when they witness you step in the line of fire for them, they begin to realize what kind of a leader you are and what you view as important. You know, there are times that you have someone that you're leading that they've really made a mistake that's going to cost them severely, either their job or time off or reputation. And you know the chewing is going to be bad, and you're not trying to get them out of that punishment. You know, my approach to that is, you're going to read them and weep on this one, and I can't prevent that. But what I can do is go speak for you. And maybe when your ass finally cools off and the embers are extinguished maybe there'll be a place for you to recover. And you go and you put your reputation on the line for that person because you've invested yourself in them and you know their weaknesses. You might even know why they deviated and caused so much trouble. And you speak up for them instead of going, oh, chief, I totally agree. I can't believe he did that. Instead, you get up there and you say, I know my guys, and I know that he wouldn't have done that normally. Something's wrong. Let me talk to him. You get in the way and you take the shots if you have to for those people.
It goes a long way when you do that.
Absolutely. And they will, you know, you can turn to that deviant firefighter and you can say, you left me swinging in the wind here, pal. I am really angry with you. I feel let down. The behavior you have displayed makes me wonder what you've been doing with me all this time. Have you not been paying attention? You can confront them like that. And when you have, you have the right to do that when you have gone out on a limb and taken a bunch of shrapnel on their behalf, and you're standing in front of them with your rear end in tatters, and then you can turn to them and say, look, we're not gonna take this any further, but you should know I am disappointed. You don't say, and I've been guilty of this, you don't say, man, I got my ass chewed over you. You don't say that. What you say is, it stops here. And, you know, they know that you took a shoeing. They know that you've been fragged. You don't need to remind them. And that is a huge lesson for them. Even if you lose them as an employee, maybe the disaster won't be as bad as it would have been if you hadn't have gotten in there and taken a few shots. And you have to weigh that out for yourself as to whether this firefighter is worth that effort on your part. And everybody has a different scale of value in that. But they're your people, and you have to take ownership for them, especially in a department where you don't have the same crew every day. You've got a pool of guys that just rotate around on a constant basis, and they lack that cohesion that you would normally have in a company that doesn't do that. You will develop a group of guys that will follow you if you invest in every single person that's on your rig that day to some degree. You there?
I'm right here. I just was letting you finish your opinion. So number
tell
seven.
Me to shut up.
No. Number seven.
Number seven, keeping your firefighters informed. Maybe it should be number one. Communication is often, as we hear frequently these days, communication is pivotal. And all of us can count the times when we have failed to communicate properly as leaders. And we also marveled at those who communicate really well. And you can communicate well in some circumstances and be really bad at communication in others. I think this is something you have to work on all the time as an officer, and this is where number one does come in. You have to be aware of your communication style and the errors in it. One of my problems is the way my voice carries in an SCBA mask, I frequently just get a blank stare when I give an order. So I've learned to develop the habit. I developed a habit where I grab a firefighter by the head and I pull him down close to me, or I get down next to him and I speak right into his ear while gesturing and pointing at the same time. And that has produced a result where they turn to you and say, man, I knew exactly what you wanted and where you wanted it and when you wanted it. That worked great. So by opening myself up to trying something different, I found some success. But also, this also applies to just sitting around the firehouse and explaining what it is that the department wants of them and why we're going about it this way. And especially, once again, with this young generation, they want to understand why. It's not enough to them for you to say, I don't know, we've always done it that way. That's not enough to them. They want to know, because if you don't buy into it, don't expect them to, and they will flagrantly not obey. So the more you keep them in on the picture, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, and I look at this as the expectations of what you want as a company officer on your company, what the department wants from their companies, what you want to see out of enrichment of your company. And, you know, this is it covers a wide range of things, not just in the morning when everybody's comes together at the beanery table and, you know, everybody's got a cup of coffee and we're getting ready for the day's events. You know, that's where I struggle, is planning out the day's events, because it's so early in the morning, we don't know what's really going on. And Berg and a couple of the other guys on the company are like, what's on our list? And I said, you know what the day starts off with. It starts with PT and it goes to truck checks. And from there, you know, hopefully I'll have a plan by that time. And they've asked me to put together more effort, or to put more effort into doing that, and to put a AM and PM plan together so that they know what to plan for the day. And I'm doing that. And that goes right in line with informed. But, you know, I'm also tying into that is the, is your expectations, and that's across the board, you know?
Right. And you know,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, by keeping your Marines informed, I'm getting my job confused in my head.
I got you.
I'm having flashbacks. No, by keeping your firefighters informed, there is a great example of what this principle means in the combat zone, which is for us in the firefighting zone or the emergency scene in general, is if you're committing to battle and you've educated and kept your people informed, they achieve their objective. But do you want them to sit down on their laurels and kick back and have a break, knock their boots off, take their SCBA and drop it, take their helmet off at that point? Or do you want them to see where are we at in our overall objective, and what does he want me to do? Where is the end goal? How can I push that goal further? I've got my objective done. I might need to check in to make sure we're not doing any freelancing. But if I know what the overall objective is, I can additionally add to the effort and throw resources at it. And we have to be careful about this on the fire ground. But you understand what I'm saying, I'm sure, in that just because you got the first step done, you know, we can break this all the way down to the guy coming out of the jumpsuit. If we've communicated clearly that we intend to go through the front door most of the time, because that is going to put us between the victims and the fire most of the time, then as that guy pulls the hose off the rig and gets himself into position to lay the hose down while you're communicating with the chief or you're running around doing a 360, you've given him enough guidelines that unless there's an extreme circumstance, he can carry that job a long ways forward to further the objective by the time you come around the edge of the house to join him. If he knows that your intent is to go directly at the fire on the Alpha Bravo side of the house, then he's not going to be wondering about what's to the right necessarily and want to go off in that direction. He knows we're planning to go left. You get what I'm – see my point?
Oh, absolutely.
It seems really elementary, but so often when we communicate, regardless of our words, our attitude is just do what you're told. And we've talked about that tonight. But by keeping them informed and getting rid of this idea that you're not paid to think, well, that's a bunch of crap. You are paid to think, because I might need you to think so that we can all survive this, and I might make a mistake that's going to put us in jeopardy. So don't be afraid to, and I've told my guys this, don't be afraid to wrap me on the back of the helmet and say, well, what about this behind us? Maybe I don't know about that. Maybe I missed it, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, did you want to move on to number 8 then, or is there more to say there?
No, I'm good with that. I think we're going to tie back to communication. I'm looking ahead. I see that we're going to be talking about communication again.
Absolutely. Number 8 is seeking responsibility and take responsibility for your actions. Not only do you to exercise your leadership skills and to advance yourself as a leader. You take your team and you tackle new challenges. And that's what is meant by seeking responsibility. But not only in that, as you get more responsibility, you take responsibility for your actions. Going back to the order that we don't want to follow, and we don't want to face our guys and be the yes man for the chief. You know, if you're going to deviate, you got to take responsibility for that. You cannot put that off on anybody else. If you're going to lay your, you're going to talk to bravado about putting your job on the line, well then, go ahead and put your job on the line, but be prepared to take the badge off and hand it to the chief. It may not be that extreme, but you put up or you shut up.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that's the company officer. The buck should stop right there at the backbone, the core functioning unit of that fire department or that fire and EMS department is the company officer. And the struggle that so many guys have is in these smaller departments or mid-sized departments where there is no constant crew, there is no constant leader. It's just whoever the flavor of the day is and whoever ended up on the rig that day. It's very hard to stand up and say, well, I'll take the hit for that, because most of the time there's multiple people involved in what went wrong. So it's really hard to get a guy to stand up and take the blame for what he knows everybody else has been doing. But, you know, you look in the mirror and you say, I'm tired of saying I want to work in a real fire department. Real fire department is looking at me in the face. And it's going to start right here. I'm going to establish what I believe it should be is going to start with me today. And you live your life that way.
I look at society, and society in general is looked at pushing off responsibility. So the kind of the environment that most Americans are brought up in is, when you look at legal battles and all these different things, it's always it's somebody else's fault. It's never my fault. And, I'm going to pull the stupid lawsuit of the gal that got burned by McDonald's coffee and sued McDonald's and won. I mean, to me, that's absurd. That if you know that it's hot coffee, she didn't order a cold coffee. In fact, we didn't have cold coffee then yet. You know, it was hot coffee. They give her a cup and she spills it, and she's going to sue them because she got burned, is absolutely ridiculous. But we've created a society where nobody is going to take responsibility for things that are happening. That bleeds into the fire service. And if anything, our little microcosm of the world, being the fire service or your fire service, that should be the easiest place to take responsibility. If you're good at what you do, you know that you're going to make mistakes, you live by your mistakes, they're not very big mistakes, you know, hopefully, then when you do make a mistake, the value you have by standing up and saying, man, I was wrong there. That was my fault. You know, battalion chief asked, hey, why didn't I get the nothing found on the primary search? Don't come up with an excuse. Just say, you know what, chief, that's my fault. I forgot. Your guys are going to credit you for that. They're going to realize that you're just as human as they are. So, that drives me nuts when people do not, especially in our organization, do not take responsibility, and they're just looking at, no, it wasn't me.
It's integrity.
Absolutely. And you get into situations where there's no way you're going to win. You know, I got into a situation with a battalion chief where, the fire chief had directed that accountability passports were going to be used with religious dependents. We're going to make sure we're using them at all times. And, so there's a learning curve there. And I lost control of one firefighter for 30 seconds. He disappeared just for 30 seconds. But that is the exact moment when the battalion showed up and said, hey, now that you're back outside, where's your passport? And where is this guy? Where is he? And I'm like, he's right here. Well, he was right here. He was standing, chief, he's standing right behind me. And even though that young man and I had discussions later, and the whole crew, and I went around the wagon trail about how accountability takes place on the fire ground and why certain guys are allowed to freelance off and take initiative and why others are not. When it came to facing him, I didn't make any excuse. I looked him in the eye and I said, yes, sir, I'm sorry. And I just took the hit because I couldn't say anything else. It doesn't matter that it wasn't a winning situation for me either way. We were retreating out of the building. The other company that was making the initial attack was pushing us out. The young man just decided that he was wanted on another hose line, and he took off. And he saw his error later. We talked about it. But the problem started with communication, and it caught me with my drawers down around my ankles. So that also leads into number 9, which is making sure that you're – what's that, Rob?
I was just going to say, just before you move on, I mean, Jason squeaked in a word there that was pretty important. He said integrity, and, you know, and in my leadership class that I'm in right now, that's we're listing all of the qualities of a good leader, you know, trustworthy, has integrity, good communicator, you know, all of these things. And integrity, I have to say, I don't care the trustworthy or integrity as an individual is probably one of the highest that you can have as a quality for a company officer, because you're not going to always be the best, but because you have integrity, there's a lot of things on this list of good qualities of a company officer you're not going to be violating just
right.
because you have integrity. So,
and when you have really messed up badly and you're standing in front of the man and you've got your reputation in your hands and you're surrendering it to his desktop, you know, when they're able to look you in the eye and say, you know what, I know your heart, and I know where you were going with this, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing to account for it, but you know you did wrong. You know, you're going to take the chewing, but there's also a measure of grace there because of that integrity. It's critically important. And Jason, thank you for bringing it up, because we haven't gotten that's a central part of this discussion, but we're not going to make it to the leadership traits tonight. And that is a vital one. And you, sir, have immense integrity. And I'm glad you brought that to the table. One of the things I was going to mention about this is when you're prepared to take responsibility for your actions, that includes your convictions, even if you don't think you did wrong. One of the results of our current culture, and I've been told before that Ben, the way you lead works over there because they're all young kids, but it doesn't work where we work. I call horse puppy on that, and there's reasons I feel I can justify it, but to keep it short, if you choose not to lead with integrity the people that are beneath you in a career department where you're going to be working with those people for a long time, then when you become a battalion chief or you step up to fulfill a leadership role above there, you cannot turn around and say, and no, you can't lead these people. Nobody can lead these people, because you defied it at when you were in their position, and they know you defied it. And you cannot then expect them to follow you when you take a leadership role. You guys left, didn't you?
No, we didn't. I'm listening. I was waiting for you.
I'm in awe.
Learned most of this. All I'm doing is telling you about my own mistakes.
Yeah. Well, is that tying into number 9?
The way number 9 ties in is that my battalion chief coined the phrase amongst us, clarifying questions. Ask your clarifying questions, because he and I are both very aggressive in different directions frequently. So we've learned that we need to tell the guys, clarify the question, clarify your questions. Make sure you asked everything you know that you needed to understand from what I said. If I told you to take the hydrant down the street, is there anything about that that you don't understand? And make sure you clarify it. Maybe we don't have time to have a discussion about that in the middle of a structure fire, but we do have time to discuss that on a drill. And when it comes to just getting regular department operations done on a daily basis, ask those clarifying questions. And that, you know, you have to create the environment where it's acceptable to do that. Because if they open their mouth to get a clarifying question and you rip their head off and shove them out the door and throw their head after them, they're not going to come back and ask that clarifying question. And then you have to accept the result of your style of communication, which may be completely backwards from what you intended.
This is a communication thing again. And a lot of this is tying back to other things. Like you said, on the receiving end, when you are the leader and the individual is asking this clarifying question, you have to accept the fact that you're going to take in that input and you're not going to push them aside as that's a stupid question. You know, if they're not clear about it, then make sure that they clear and that they understand it. Now, when the individual keeps on asking the same question over and over again, and it's been over a few different incidents, then there's a problem with the individual and processing the information, and you handle that different than if it's an individual that doesn't normally ask a ton of these questions, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And, you know, part of this is making sure – I'm not sure that we actually stated what principle number 9 is. It's ensure the task is understood, supervised, and accomplished. With this young generation, they want to have delegation. They want to take responsibility. They want to run with the program. They want to be allowed to make contributions. But you still have to reach the mission goal mark. And without any new person, regardless of generation, without understanding the goal, and without you checking in with them frequently, they're going to wander off the beaten path. They're going to miss the mark because maybe in the enthusiasm of it, they forgot what the goal was. So learning how to delegate is one thing. Learning how to then check in with them, put your hand on their shoulder and just say, so how's it going? Instead of immediately criticizing what you see, which is the temptation. Because, you know, you walk out on the floor, you send them to go take care of a project, and you walk out on the floor and you look at the results, and the first thing that crosses your mind is, holy crap, I picked the wrong guy to do this job. But you made the decision to appoint that person to do it. So the worst thing you can possibly do is run back in the kitchen, grab the guys, drag them out, and say, look at this. Can you believe he did that? You know, that's, and then tear him a new suit of pants because you're just looking to get your licks in because you're so ticked off at him. You make the assignment. You make sure that they understand what is expected of them. If supervision is a necessary component and you want to give them some freedom, then you assign someone with some more experience to keep tabs on them. And then you check in periodically to make sure they're not wandering off into a rabbit trail and it becomes something you never intended. That is a critical part of communication. So, you know, I'm all about delegation. I think delegation is great. And I think sometimes people that are not accustomed to being led don't understand what to do with delegation. They think that, okay, it's been delegated to me. That means I wasn't at the party, so they appointed a new treasurer, and I'm going to take a hit for everything that's wrong in this situation because I'm delegated. I'm the one that received the responsibility. That's their reaction to delegation frequently. When if you look at them and you realize they're staring back at you waiting for you to tell them what to do, even though you think you've delegated. So you have to teach them how to receive the delegation and what it means to take responsibility. And what I mean, pal, is you come up with some ideas. Tell me what you want to do. We'll talk about it. I'm providing supervision. I'll bring some reality to what you want to do. And then I'm going to let you take off with it. And I hope you're successful. And if you need anything, you let me know. And you keep open communication and work forward. If we don't give that to our people clearly and with good supervision and accountability, we're going to continue to be the struggling system that we are.
Well, we've got 15 minutes left of the show, so we'll tie things up with this last one, which is really important, and then some closing comments there, Ben. And the last one is train your firefighters as a team.
That's actually the second to last, but it's...
Oh.
We can combine the two of them together.
Am I missing a sheet? Oh, no, there it is.
Yeah, number 11, employ your company in accordance with its capabilities. Those really kind of go hand in hand. One of the hardest things as an officer is balancing, you might want to be with the crew while they're training, but you know that a debrief the next morning or when you're getting out and going home, if you don't have your reports done, if you don't have everything that an officer is responsible to get done, your butt hanging out there and it's poor performance. So you're balancing the need to be with the guys with the demands of administration. And I'll tell you what, in a small department especially, where you're not only the company officer, but you're also the training officer, and you're also the supply guy or whatever it might be, that is a lot to organize and carry through in the day and still contribute with your crew. And all I can say is every chance you get, you get out there and you train with them. You let them see you perform. My guys, a couple weeks ago, we got a break in the weather. It was like 5 above, and they whipped out the 2.5 hose line, and they put a play pipe on it, charged it up, and they were practicing nozzle forward techniques. And I went out there, and as soon as I was able to wrap things up, I got my boots on, put my helmet on, went running out there with them. And I took a trip around the ice with a 2.5 with them, just so they could see that I'm not afraid to get back on that pipe. I'm not afraid to show them that there may be something they picked up in the class and have down better than me. At the same time, I'm also going to lend – that's my opportunity to say, this nozzle forward stuff is great, but I don't know that every tactic is going to apply when you're stuck in a trailer crawling through this person's life debris. You're not going to do the shoot and scoot inside there. It's not going to apply. So learn the tactics, but know when to apply them. That's just as critical. That's my chance to say those things. That's when you're hanging out in that group. That's when they're going to say, so-and-so on YouTube does it this way. And that's my opportunity to say, that impresses me that you've learned to do the same thing. I never knew an extension ladder can be tossed in the air like that. But I'll tell you what, if you miss on scene and someone gets hit, you won't ever do that again.
You were going to say there's a time and a place.
There's a time and a place to do those things and helping them understand how to bring foreign training into their culture and society, where the chief won't freak out, or the other officers don't, go ballistic.
Yeah.
There's some finesse. There's some finesse and some good communication that needs to take place there. If you don't train with your people, and this is a constant problem, maybe the company trains together, but the chief, the line officers that are acting up, or the battalion chiefs, don't train with those same companies. So when the company arrives on scene, it's developed a plan, it has a goal, it knows what the officer wants, they're going to try to meet that, and then all of a sudden there's that broadcast from the command vehicle completely shattering any plan that you might have created and giving you something completely different that you're not accustomed to training on, because the battalion level and the captain level never trains together.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, that brings up a really interesting thing. It's familiar to me. One of the things that we bring up in our truck and engine classes when we go around the state is strategy, tactic, and task, the three elements of a good fire scene. you know, the chief officer, senior officer, incident commander, whatever you want to call them, they're in charge of that strategy. They determine what needs to get done in order to get the fire out, get the people rescued, whatnot. They pass that down. The objectives to accomplish that strategy are passed to the company officers, who are then, you know, they come up with the tactic. In order to complete the ventilation, the extinguishment, the rescue, they're not told how to do it. They're just given a strategy, an objective. The company officer comes up with a tactic, whatever it may be, doing VES or going on the roof or doing horizontal ventilation, whatever it may be. And then the firefighters need to stick to their task. They know that they've been charged by their company officer to do roof ventilation, vertical vent, then they should know what that task is. As long as each person stays within their strategy, their tactic, or their task and doesn't get outside that and make too many extra plans above and beyond their own scope of their position, then things should go smoothly. Of course, they don't always, because the plan changes and, you know, morphs as you go along. But it's very important that each person in their own category stays within that category. And when they get outside of it too much, that's when things kind of start to go south and cascade.
Well, hey, Ben, I was
going to... That's absolutely right.
I was just going to say, you know, tying to what Jason's saying is that earlier, you know, you were saying when somebody takes something off of YouTube or comes back from a class, it gives you the opportunity, excuse me, it gives you the opportunity just to educate them as why we don't do it that way. These are the reasons why. In Alaska, we can't fight fire the way that they do in Florida, you know, because there's some elements that are different in Alaska. So it gives you the opportunity to be able to give them better explanation as to why. But it also, as a company officer, it gives you an opportunity to show them that you are a student. There are some things that get brought into the company that they've experienced through education that are really good things. Because a lot of the times, or what I'm learning is I've spent a lot of my times learning and educating myself at the college level, at being a better leader, at being a better manager, being, you know, all these things that are more didactic than they are hands-on. And so my skills at the hands-on level, I rely on my experience to be good at that. Well, I'm not going out to a lot of these classes and spending a lot of time hands-on because I've got all these other things going on. But at the company level, I have that opportunity when they want to show me a new skill on forcible entry that they learned in a class at FDIC, and we do it. Now I can show them I too can be a student, and I can earn credit that way. And we all, I mean, we should be students of our craft all the time. And so I see that as an opportunity to, you know, to kind of bring that in as we're talking about training and all of our capabilities as a company. And we're running right down to 7 minutes, so I'll let you final up some words there, Ben, and we'll start closing this thing down.
Okay, well, you know, I just want to finish up what you just said by taking it back to where we started. In every level of command, whether we're talking about the company or the battalion level or the chief level, if we have skipped a level of leadership training and experience, or if we were promoted and never taught that upper level that we're going to, and learning stopped before we went there, you're going to fall back to what Jason was talking about. You're going to try and act on the scene with what you know, which is to act in the lower level that you were better at, because you're not comfortable with the level you're at now. So if I'm a really good firefighter, well-versed in my skills, and I get promoted to officer, but nobody ever assists me with learning the officer role as a company officer, and I didn't get enough experience under a good company officer to have learned it by observation, I might continue to micromanage the firefighter underneath me, taking the tool out of his hands and showing him, no, that's not how you do it. You do it this way. And I'll abdicate my position as leader, and all the responsibility goes with it, because that's what I know and that's what I'm comfortable with. This officer stuff is too highfalutin and too, you know, too above me. We get into a trap there, because then when we become a battalion chief, the next level of command, we're not thinking on that more department global aspect. And so the idea of strategy is still kind of a foreign concept until we try to operate tactically and we badger the captain to death. And if we train our captain that way, he's going to treat the lieutenant that way. And so the buck's got to stop somewhere. And it's very hard to teach older firefighters to change their ways. But what we can take drastic action on is our young people and show them the way to lead from the very beginning and give them an understanding and an expectation that, you know, you don't just stop learning because you think you know everything about being a company officer. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm in school. I just finished my degree a few years ago. I'm taking another degree, and I'm also pursuing these chief officer classes because someday I just may end up having to be a chief, and I better know what I'm doing. And when I become a chief officer, I'm going to have my hands full. So when you become a lieutenant or a captain behind me, you better know your job because I can't come and do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be that understanding that you have to – we cannot be taking our backbone sergeants out and moving them so far forward because they'll lose that experience that they needed. The guys that fill in for them will get promoted too fast, and it ripples through like crazy. And the next thing you know, your organization has lost depth and experience in its most critical spots. And
you know,
a lot of that has to – go ahead.
I was just going to say, just because we only got like 4 minutes left, I was just going to say I look at my organization I'm in right now. You know, when I came in, it was very small, and it's not that we're a big department, but we grew really quick. We were promoting company officers every single year, and that's a tough thing to do because there's a lot of people that got promoted with very little experience, and then it's left to them as an individual to seek out that experience and seek out additional training to improve themselves. And so sometimes your environment does not allow you to be able to have all the experience. But then when that happens, when you're not working in Chicago or New York or wherever it is real busy, you've got to pick up the books, you got to get on the computer, and you got to do something about it.
Absolutely. One of the things that really caught my attention, so I was reading the book The Last Men Out by Downey, and he's talking about Ruvolo, or maybe it's Ruvolo. I don't want to discredit the proper speaking pronunciation of his name, but they're coming back from a fire, and this is before 9/11, and he's on the busiest company in the busiest city, and they're coming back, and he's thinking to himself, I'm not getting enough fire to train up my replacement. How am I going to teach these guys how to lead this company if I can't get them enough fire to teach them? And I thought, if an officer in New York feels that way, on the busiest company, how in the world am I going to bring somebody in a sleepy little town up to par? I'm lucky to get a quality fire once a month. And that has that really sunk in with me, and that has translated into a constant drive to educate my replacements and bring them up and give my job away. I'm going to duplicate myself as much as possible all the time because I don't have any other choice if the department's going to move on when my generation passes away. So I know we're out of time, so I'm going to let you finish up, and I just really appreciate the opportunity to blab about this. It was a good cup of coffee, man.
Well, I tell you, Ben, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I wish I had more time to talk with you, and you know, we can get together again at FDIC, so I'm looking forward to that. Jason, always great to see you get on. When you called, I wish you would have said it was Jason beforehand. I wouldn't have left you on hold so long. So,
it's an honor and a privilege to hang out with you guys for a few minutes. I appreciate it. Be safe.
Thanks, brother.
Love you, brother.
So in wrapping up, I want to thank Fire Engineering, Penwell, Bobby Halton. And there's, you know, 15 of you that hung on. I'm looking down here. It's starting to dwindling because you hear we're wrapping up. But a number of you that hung on throughout this whole three-hour conversation between Ben and I, and I appreciate you guys hanging on through it all. Our next one for the Fools is March 1st, so come on back. Make sure you keep on training. And for me and Ben, we appreciate you guys hanging on and participating. Have a good night.
Take care, brother.
Keep on.